The following podcast contains adult subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
From where John is rubbing that spot, you're listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box with Juan, John, and Gabe.
Oh, yeah.
Do you just like have, every time you like have an orgasm, you just shit your pants?
Yeah.
Oh.
Basically.
We're recording,
it's
by the way.
It's very messy.
I like that every episode starts with us having a conversation and Juan going, we're live.
We're recording, by the way.
And we're back.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to a new episode of Thinking Outside the Long Box. I'm Gabe.
I'm Juan.
I'm John.
And you just had an orgasm.
Yes, I did.
Crapped your pants.
In my butt.
What?
Crapped your pants and your butt?
A buttgasm?
Was it your birthday or something?
People tell me that's a thing.
People like the ties?
That is...
People on the internet.
Oh, that's not a thing. Oh, whatever.
Hey, I'm sorry, Mel.
Mel's upset that I ate a bag of chips that have literally been in the cupboard for like 2 months.
I realized them last night, so I was going to eat them for my lunch. You got stoned and ate the whole fucking bag, you ass.
2 months.
Well, stop giving him weed.
Two months I don't eat those chips. 2 months. I bought
them last month. Oh, still, that's a long
time. 1 month.
That's a month of chips. I got some chips for you, Mel.
Oh, John has some chips for you. I don't know if that's innuendo.
I would assume it is.
It's probably innuendo.
What does that even mean?
I don't know.
I'm so confused.
John, how's life, man?
You don't know you can't afford it. What?
John, how's life, man?
Life is good.
We haven't
How
seen
are you guys?
You in 2 weeks. It's been so long.
What's that?
It's been so long without you.
It hasn't been that long.
I know. I mean, it's been like way less time than it normally is.
2 weeks.
Our regular recording schedule, so... Unless you guys are recording on the sly without me, that's fucked up.
Oh, no.
Just
no,
FYI.
Of course not. We would
We've got
not
another
do
show
such
called
a thing.
Thinking Inside the Long Box.
Oh,
just
that would
porn.
Be a little show.
Because, like, only I read comic books occasionally.
And I don't fit in long boxes.
Well, I'm sure we could find one that you fit in.
Yeah. If we chopped all your arms and legs off, then you'd fit.
And, like, stacked them on top of each other.
Exactly.
Man.
I mean, you brought it up.
Yeah. I'm just saying, we can make it work.
So this episode, instead of starting
episode
off with something.
Episode 57. I
sure?
believe it's 57.
Let's look.
Yeah, 57. Episode 56 is coming out today. Woo!
Hey, woo!
Nice.
Noise.
Noise.
So this episode, I want to start not with something that Tim Husky, hashtag butt plug enthusiast, sent me, but something that I sent to Tim.
Another picture of your dick.
Yes.
Dick pics in the morning.
And Tim was all like, where is it? I don't see it.
Yeah. Well, if you pull the skin back, then it's kind of
it. No, so
it
I saw...
like a forest.
I saw an article...
Yeah. I just puked on my laptop.
So hairy. I didn't know pubes got that long.
Oh. Pubes have a beard.
The pubes have pubes. They've reached maturity.
The pubes have little penises too.
Yeah.
It's like Inception in here.
It's like that. It's like the scene from Doctor Strange with the hand, but with dicks.
Gross.
Broke John.
That hand freaked me out.
Oh yeah, it's amazing. Anyway, so I sent him this article that is about a pair of underpants that are specifically designed to make it look like you have a camel toe.
Yes.
Oh.
They're like underwear with like this weird plastic like crotch front.
Mm-hmm.
So that when you pull up your yoga pants.
I feel like John sounds like he owns a pair.
I might. I mean, I'm not going to put on airs.
His camel toe's in the back though.
Yeah.
What would that be called? Like, that's got to be called something different.
That's the moose knuckle.
I don't think that's what that is either. I think that's dude camel toe.
It's just dumb. That's all.
Oh, man.
Oh, buddy. What's going on?
So why? Why would you need, like, wouldn't you just...
I thought people avoided camel toe.
Is that a little tighter?
Yeah, like, that's what I was thinking. The only thing I can think of is if it's for, like, maybe drag queens or something.
Okay.
Like, dudes that want to look like they have camel toe.
Huh.
But...
like a lady whose name is Camellia Toe or something like that.
or like maybe a lady that doesn't want to shave but wants it to look like she shaves.
Okay. That's weird.
I know. Those are really the only two things.
You don't think hairy women get camel toe?
Well, I mean, but you could see it. It'd be okay. Like a little, like, you know, pile on top of the camel toe. Be like, oh, that lady's got camel toe and like an afro
and a weird clit. It's either some sort.
It's either a tumor or a shitload of hair.
That camel toe's got some fungus on it or something.
Oh shit!
Side note: there's a whole thing on Twitter about people taking pictures of camel toes. Just FYI.
Oh, I'm sure there is.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I mean, just like there's. A whole thing on the internet of people taking pictures of, like, women's feet.
Yeah, and making panties to look like camel toe, apparently.
It's just a weird, you never know.
So we got voted Pot of the Week.
I know.
That was awesome.
Potter and Family.
Yes. If you're not a part of that group, it's a pretty cool little group, especially if you're just starting. It just broadens the reach of who listens to you. In the past 3 days, I think we've had about 200 downloads, which is insane.
Really?
Yeah, it's nice. Crazy. Huh. Just
so can we attribute those things to that, or yes. Is it like
I would? So at least most of them.
Potter and Family, like Potter and Family, has what, like, almost 9,000 followers.
Yeah,
and so when people see those posts, I mean, only like 200 people voted on the post, but even if only those 200 people are looking at it and downloading it, that's, I mean, 200 new people. It's, I don't know, it's pretty cool.
Well, so I don't know, John, if you're familiar with kind of what it is, but it's just a big group of people who make podcasts.
Or people that just want to learn new podcasts.
So whenever I put an episode out, I'll pin it to the top of our Twitter profile. And then I'll go out and retweet as many of those people who have new shows out, and they'll reciprocate. They'll do the same thing. So not only is our normal audience – you know, able to see it, but then it goes off into the audience of those people as well.
Sure.
So it's like a pay it forward program with podcasts.
That's cool.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. Like it's been fun watching the voting happen and like the kind of like friendly, like competition that crushed.
I told you that was my first meme, that we would crush them.
You're next to vote.
My Yoda one was probably the funniest.
That was good.
The 7 hours was pretty that funny, was good. Too. Yeah. You have 7 hours left. I like the guy that said, he said something to you and you just responded, you might be getting a phone call later.
Oh, yeah. It was Leslie Wenzel. It was contributes a lot to the Quantum Leap side.
Nice.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Well, we got 8 minutes to the next interview, so we're just bantering, I think, at this point.
I have more weird sex news.
Let's hear it.
So let's Carissa found this article the other night on Facebook.
How many sex groups are you guys a part of? I never see sex fucking articles.
It's because you don't look for that, man. you got to broaden your horizon.
Okay, yeah, maybe. All right.
I do, because now I have to contribute something to that's perverted to this show, including my own self. So, you know, but outside of my own self. So now I go out and find these weird fucking things.
And then, it's
and this is coming from somebody in the UK. It's an article on scarymommy.com that people are now freezing their genitals to improve their sex lives. So I'd like to get your guys' opinion on this.
I don't even know what that means. Like freezing, like just for like a second or something?
Here, let me tell you. So what it's known as genital freezing, and so you basically get, you get a squirt of some kind of love mist, which I'm assuming is like a what is that, the fucking the cold stuff? I can't think of it.
Like a zit remover or something
that will turn the temperature of your genitals, either your lady bits, your tunnel of love, or your twigs and berries, down to -160 degrees.
Jesus.
The process is done by a trained professional. The therapist blasts a chilly -160 degree vapor over the genital area via liquid nitrogen. During the icy 30-minute treatment, which is insane and costs about $62.50, the nitrogen is filtered.
Wait a minute, $62 or $6,000?
$62.50.
Oh, yeah, that's too little to freeze my balls off. That seems like if I'm paying for a procedure and it's like millions of dollars, I feel like they're going to do a good job.
Right.
If it costs $60, yeah, you're like, nope. This better be at least $600 or I don't trust you to do it.
You mean for $62.50 you wouldn't let somebody
For starters, I wouldn't let somebody do this anyways.
Liquid nitrogen, don't they put hot dogs in that and then like slam them with hammers? Exactly.
So the nitrogen is filtered and distributed through a funnel in the form of an ice cold vapor. And so according to cryotherapy, it's a skincare clinic in England that does this stuff. It improves clients' sex drives because when the sub-zero temperature covers the skin, the sudden drop in heat stimulates the temperature receptors, which then prompts the brain to transmit messages through the body, so the blood vessels undergo vasoconstriction. The process produces a quicker blood flow and ramps up endorphin levels, generating a natural high. And in turn, this is supposed to, while the skin continues to feel the freeze, the body sends signals back and forth to the brain that tells the brain that there's damage to the tissues and to repair them. And it's that kind of synapse thing, along with the endorphin level energy boost and natural high, that generates a tighter, youthful, clear, and vibrant genital skin appearance through boosting collagen.
Yeah, but don't you have shrinkage? Like, who cares if it's tight if you can't see it?
The fucking I was in the pool scenario.
I know, exactly. Right.
Like, I feel negative, like the instant that liquid nitrogen hits, like, it's just going to suck back up into my body. Like, just.
And then I can't have sex for the next 10 hours, anyways.
Right. Because I'll have orgasmed out of my asshole.
Who is so concerned with the appearance of your vertical smile or your twig and berries that you need to fucking freeze your genitals?
Well, I mean, who did liquid nitrogen just fall on somebody's balls one time and they're like, oh, this feels good? Like, how do you get to that point? Like
a fucking pervert that was like in a lab somewhere, naked with a lab coat on, that was probably doing the hot dog thing and like it dropped onto his junk and he's like, oh man, it's so much tighter and looks more youthful, and I love the way my cock looks in liquid nitrogen.
It's so smooth.
And for $62.50, I'll do it to you too.
I mean, I'll just stick my penis in ice or something. I mean, I don't need it to be a -160 or whatever the fuck you just said. Well,
maybe if it's not that cold, maybe it doesn't, you know, make the skin tight. Maybe it just makes the skin cold.
Doesn't damage the fucking cells, causing your brain to say, what the fuck is going on?
That doesn't seem fun to me.
No, yeah. That seems right. Awful. Like, I don't like when it's cold, like, just in my house. You know, it's like, oh, hey, it's like 60 degrees. My balls are
He doesn't even dick swing in his house when it's cold.
I know. My balls are
he doesn't dick swing anyway.
Go inside.
He's got the Ball Johnson move. You ever heard that from Friday?
I got the bell clapper.
Jesus. They're just regular. Maybe that's the cure to bell clapper right there.
Some liquid nitrogen and then a hammer. No bell clapper anymore. It's all gone. Like, what if you, like, what if they're doing the treatment and you, like, slip off the table and, like, shatter it? Like, I just, no part of this sounds like an intelligent move.
Well, and here's the thing. Like, where do you get the 50 cents from?
I know. Why 50 cents? Make it $62 or make it $63. Like, I don't understand, like, what's so vital about the 50 cents that they can't round it up or round it down?
If you want to get your balls frozen, you can pay $63.
Like, I just feel like it's the doctor from The Simpsons. Hi!
Hey, everybody! Oh, holy crap.
Just like he got his doctorate from like some like online community college, like not even a,
like where you get where you can marry people, you get that at the same place.
Yeah, he has his doctorate in medicine, I guess, and churching.
Well, and let's not, you know, discredit the fact that it takes fucking 30 minutes.
I mean, like, are you expected to, like, so, you know, well, as it grows and shrinks, like the skin gets larger and smaller, like you're stretching it out. Like, are you expected to maintain a solid erection? I couldn't.
For
30 minutes. Maybe that's what
it is. Like, somebody just hold it out. Like,
you might have to be stroking me or something, because I can't maintain an erection just sitting there for 30 minutes.
Just the friction alone would either ruin the effect or completely chafe your skin off. Like,
right. It's just peeling off like a sunburn, you know? Layers. Ogres have layers.
This is a nightmare scenario that you have presented.
And then again,
John,
you know, you got somebody who trained professional in quotes is doing this to you. So what do you talk to them? Like you know, like Gabe with his ball ultrasound. Like, do you make small talk? Do you ask for a drink? What do you know?
Maybe she's just naked. Maybe the person doing it is just a naked hot chick.
Yeah,
and that's how you maintain the erection.
Like an even more legitimate medical procedure.
Right.
Well, she's
less
office. Clothing is more sterile, I would assume.
No, that is the opposite of how that works. Maybe it's like at the dentist's office, how they can set up a TV in front of you so you can watch it while they're like working.
Oh,
and they just have porn going.
I don't
midget
know.
Porn.
Oh, okay. I thought they would. I thought you meant you would watch them doing it. I was like, I don't want to watch them freezing.
Oh,
my
no. Oh God, that'd
be even more
awful.
Terrifying. Yeah.
What are you doing?
Wait. Little to the left. Oh, there it is. Yeah, that's good.
Okay. Let's resume this conversation in 30 minutes.
Okay.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Let's
John,
not
are
resume
you,
this.
Are you going to be around?
Let's talk about
I
other
will
things.
Be around.
All right, buddy. We're going to jump into an interview, and then we'll give you a call back.
Feedback. Feed me. Feedback. Feedback. Feedback.
Hey guys, my name's Adam. Just thought I'd call and let you know that I'm really enjoying your podcast. You all are pretty freaking hilarious. I think that a regular feature of the show should become where you look up obscure terms on Urban Dictionary and talk about them and see if anybody has experienced them in their personal life. That's hilarious. Also, I wanted to call with a correction. It drove me nuts while I listened to you guys talk about Lethal Weapon. The character that Danny Glover plays is Murtaugh, not Murdoch. And Gabe, you just kept saying Murdoch over and over and over again, and it was driving me bananas. So, anyways, love the show. Keep it up. Thanks.
I'm not the only caller anymore. That makes me feel so warm and fuzzy inside. I feel so special that other people have called in to your show. Finally, that's awesome. Next question is, what's with the butt plugs? Why not anal beads? I have a friend named Steve who said he's tried anal beads before. It's not me. It's really a guy named Steve. He said he tried anal beads before, and he finds them much more enjoyable than butt plugs. I'm curious if Tim Husky would be willing to call in and explain to us why butt plugs are better, because to me, a butt plug looks like it's just a big thing that you shove up your ass, boom. Whereas an anal bead, you put a little bead up there, ooh. And you put another little bead up there, ooh. And you put another bead up there, and ooh. And then you get to pull it out like a fucking ripcord, and you just get bah, 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 bah. I would think that'd be more enjoyable than just a giant thing that you shove up your ass. But I don't know. Never tried either one. Maybe Tim's tried one. He can let us know.
I'd appreciate it if you'd call in and tell us what his opinion on it is. Great job on the podcast. That was a good one. A lot of fun. Except you guys are wrong on Lethal Weapon 4 being the best Lethal Weapon. Yeah, Lethal Weapon 2 is the correct answer that we're looking for on that one. Lethal Weapon 2 had the perfect point of humor and action. It still had the seriousness from the first one and a lot more humor than the first one. However, by the third and fourth one, it got a little bit too humor heavy for me. I prefer the second one. Plus, that little South African chick, she has really nice titties. I'm sad to see her die, but great boobs. And when Riggs pulls down the mansion, come on. And then what about they always fuck you in the drive-thru? So you don't go through the drive-thru because they fuck you in the drive-thru. But by the time you get down the road, it's too late to turn back to go get your burger. And they fuck you through the drive-thru. One of the best scenes in the Lethal Weapon movies. So you guys have a good one. We'll talk to you later.
Everybody, what's going on? It's Clyde from the Old Still Radio Show, again here with Clyde's Corrections, and boy, do I have a good segment for you guys today. First of all, I'd like to say congratulations to my boys at Thinking Outside the Long Box for winning Podcast of the Week under the Podern Family hashtag. Way to go, boys. That is on Twitter, ladies and gentlemen. Out of hundreds and hundreds of podcasts, Thinking Outside the Long Box won Podcast of the Week on Twitter under hashtag Podern Family. Check it out. And again, thank you to Thinking Outside the Long Box for that wonderful crossover episode between them and us. If you haven't checked it out yet, guys, go back and check out episode 55 or episode 22 for Old Still Radio Show. All right, on to the corrections. We're going to start the way Gabe likes to start. We're going to start from the end and work our way in. So lube up, everybody. Here we go. So speaking of Gabe, you said this.
I remember reading the story and just being so stoked and loving the art. And like when I got to play the game, sure, the graphics were super underwhelming because it was the original Nintendo.
Oh, but yeah.
I loved the game so much. And
bullshit! Anybody who's old enough to remember knows that the only thing we had before the original Nintendo was an Atari or a ColecoVision. Okay? The graphics were fucking phenomenal. If you go back and try to play Atari right now, you don't even know what the hell's going on the screen because it's a bunch of blips and dots, and you're like, what the hell? Nintendo made an incredible leap forward in graphics and sound. If you remember how annoying the sounds were for the Atari, and here comes Nintendo with these catchy little jingles and Super Mario Brothers. You know, I mean, these were amazing things for us. Mind-blowing. And now I get to pick on Juan again.
See, I regressed when it came to video games. Now I want to play old stuff.
Listen, Juan, you don't have anything to prove, man. You're young. We know it. Everybody knows it. Even Jonathan from The Lamp Show gets it.
Like, the podcast is uploading real slow and slower than, like, a dial-up modem. But, when the internet first came out, so, like, people, like, connected to the internet over these modems and, like, you had to dial in and connect. Like, you didn't just use the internet wasn't always on. So, like, you know, you so that's how you'd get into the internet and make it.
I love that everybody's getting in on that bit, Juan, you young fuck. Alright, so now I just have to comment about who the fuck is this voice that we have not heard in such a long time.
Hey everybody, welcome to this episode of Thinking Outside the Long Box. I'm Gabe.
I'm Juan.
I'm John.
What? John's here because he owns the
store. Because I own the store. So fuck you guys.
The Hall of Justice needs to be Podcast Central for Thinking Outside the Long Box because I, for one, am tired of John freshly out of the shower, talking over Skype, going, hello, 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 can you hear me? Can you hear me? No, what the fuck is going on? John being there makes all the difference. John being there is a completely different show, and the chemistry between all three of you fucking rock. And I don't know what magic crack you guys fed John before this episode, but I just think he was so excited to actually be there. He was on fire, man. That's one of John's best episodes I've heard to date.
But versus aggressively red, like...
Well, no, like... like... No, like power.
It's too mainstream.
Yeah, that's so true. Much fisting and punching.
So no, like
power. I don't know Man what aggressive.
Power Man and Iron Fist is like something that I would just randomly pick up.
You slayed the whole room.
Yes.
Nobody can breathe.
Achievement unlocked.
The achievement you unlocked there, John, is you almost made Clyde run off the road from laughing hysterically, probably along with hundreds of other listeners of the podcast. Way to go, man. So this brings us to our last piece de resistance for Clyde's corrections. It's time for me to go aggro. Kind of like this guy.
I do aggressively listen to the show because you guys will be thinking of an actor and you won't know his name or director.
And you're like,
it's
you're
fucking
like,
Martin Scorsese! fucking Martin Scorsese! Jesus fucking Christ!
I need another being there.
Yeah, here's my moment like that for this episode.
Like the whole Air America project was right. Like an actual thing.
Right.
Like the Vietnam War was still like a recent memory. The fact that like Riggs and Murdoch were both in Vietnam.
Who the fuck?
You know, Murdoch is like tied to a chair and they're getting ready to fucking torture his daughter. That
are you talking about?
They're shocking Mel Gibson and stuff. Like, it's super, super intense. Then Mel Gibson escapes by straight up killing a dude.
Right.
Right? And then runs to go get Murdoch. And Murdoch has like a one-liner.
When you say Murdoch, it was Murtaugh. Murtaugh for the love of Christ game.
Fuck Danny. Stay, Danny. Somebody for the love of God.
He's calling in.
Yeah. Damn it.
And that'll do it for Clyde's corrections, everybody. Y'all come check us out here at the Old Still Radio Show. This is Clyde signing off. Again, Old Still Radio Show, www.oldstillradioshow.com. It's me and Sugaritis. Come check us out on our website or wherever you get your podcasts. We're on all of them. And now back to Thinking Outside the Long Box with Juan John and Gay.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. On the line, we have Stefano Terry. He is the writer, illustrator, and creator of Gamma Gals, which is a comic book coming out on Comixology from Fanbase Press. How are you this morning, Stefano?
I'm pretty good. I'm very, very good. How are you?
I am doing quite well. Just I have the sun in my eyes, so I am trying to adjust my face and microphone. So we like to start off each of our interviews with kind of the same basic question, like what's the origin story of X? And I actually kind of have it twofold this time. What's the origin story of Gamma Gals as a project and then the origin story of the Gamma Gals as characters?
The origin story of the Gamma Gals project, it really stems from a lot of conversations that me and my wife have about inclusivity and diversity and representation in comics and cartoons and movies. It's not just comics, it's kind of the entire entertainment industry. And we were basically talking about how minorities and women tend to get underrepresented in the comics industry. So I was thinking it'd be very cool to create a comic book that I would be happy to have, like, you know, my daughters or my nieces and nephews, you know, sit down and, you know, read and enjoy and not have a lot of the gratuitous sexualization and cheesecake of the teenage characters, and to also hopefully have, you know, a diverse cast that at least some, you know, people can find someone that they can relate to, regardless of gender, ethnicity, or sexual orientation or anything like that. Just finding these fun, you know, characters that, you know, kind of look like them or talk like them or act like them or are interested in the same things as them. And that was pretty much like the real kind of origin of it, just wanting to create something that I hoped would touch people, like how some of the cartoons and TV shows that were very inclusive touched me growing up. And then the origin of the girls themselves, they're these three teenage role-playing game playing. They play, you know, Princes in Purgatory, which is like the Dungeons and Dragons analog in the Gamma Gals universe. And they happen to be caught up in a gamma-irradiated electrical storm. And it gave them their superpowers, and they decided, because they love, you know, kind of comics and cartoons and role-playing, that they would become superheroes. And that's kind of where the story starts, they're already the Gamma Gals by the time we are introduced to them in issue number one. And so they basically go around protecting their city, you know, working part-time jobs, dealing with bullies, that kind of thing, and, you know, balancing their superhero antics with that.
So when you're, you know, kind of when you're looking at the realm of comic books and of pop culture and stuff, and you have, you know, this notion of like, you know, overly sexualized characters and this kind of pushback specifically like from the comics industry, you know, to be more inclusive and to like take characters that, you know, were one way at one point and change them. Do you think it's more effective to make, you know, diversity and inclusion a part of new things, or to kind of like transmorph like old things? Like, for example, the, you know, the new Iron Man or Lady Thor and that sort of thing. Like, which do you personally feel works better, creating new stuff or changing old stuff?
I think just from a practical standpoint, using the existing characters, like, you know, Miles Morales as Spider-Man or Riri Williams as Iron Man, I think it helps at the very least build a brand around the characters, because they already have the kind of familiar trappings of like a Spider-Man or an Iron Man. But also I do love, it's definitely, I'm really torn about it, because I also love, you know, seeing new characters and new creations and all those kind of things. But it's often very hard to get the eyes on a new IP. Like, if Miles Morales was just some guy who had powers and nobody knew who he was, it's a very strong possibility that his book wouldn't have garnered as much interest. But because he's tied so heavily to the Spider-Man IP, that's like instant fan base or instant reader base, like right there, that will at the very least possibly give it a try, just because it's the character that they're familiar with, at least the superhero persona. Yeah, so it's very, I like both personally. Like, I think both have their merits and their drawbacks. Like, the drawback of having a character like Spider-Man or Miles Morales be Spider-Man is that he's Spider-Man. He's not someone, you know, new, which is kind of disappointing, but it's just cool to see someone who looks a lot like me running around as Spider-Man and doing cool and awesome stuff. Because as a kid, I always wanted to be Spider-Man. I always wanted to be Flash or Superman or Green Lantern and my other favorite superhero characters. But, you know, a lot of them didn't look like me, obviously. And so it's really cool to see someone like Miles Morales be Spider-Man, or Riri, or even Jane Foster be Thor, because my wife, she absolutely loves, you know, Thor. And, you know, growing up, she was told, just like I was, you know, oh, you can't be Thor, you can't be, you know, Batman, because, you know, you're black or you're a woman, you know, and that sort of thing. So having someone like Jane Foster be Thor now is very, very, I think, encouraging and exciting for the female fans and the male fans and the minority fans who, you know, always felt a strong connection to these characters, but felt a little apart from it previously.
Nice.
But I like both. I really like both options.
You know, when you're talking about, you know, the transition of seeing characters that look more like yourself, and, you know, specifically talking about, you know, Jane Foster and Miles Morales and stuff like that, it's cool too, because, you know, you have this ability to rework the story and make it, you know, not just where you're visually seeing somebody that looks kind of like you, but also lives a life that may be more like you. Like, not everybody grows up like Peter Parker, you know, going to,
yeah, exactly,
going to school and being a super genius. Like, some, yeah, exactly, some of us are just, exactly, normal kids.
Yeah, with a regular IQ.
Yeah. That would be my failing. I would get bit by like a radioactive spider and have all these abilities, but just be kind of like, I guess I'll climb stuff. And
yeah. I grew up in Wisconsin in Milwaukee, so being Spider-Man probably wouldn't have been nearly as cool, because there's not a lot of things to swing around on and stuff. But I always wanted to be the Flash. I always wanted to be the Flash just because he ran super fast, and I always loved running and racing and all that kind of thing. So the Flash was always my favorite. And then later on, I became a huge Spider-Man fan once I moved to a city that at least had a few more skyscrapers. But then I moved to L.A., and there's not much to swing around over here either. So I'm back to wanting to be the Flash. But, yeah, it's very, very cool, because there's so many stories that have been told with Peter Parker, and from Peter Parker's perspective and from Peter Parker's background, that it is nice to get, like, a bunch of different Spider-Man kind of interpretations and whatnot. Like, not just Miles, but even the Superior Spider-Man, which had Doc Ock inhabiting Peter Parker's body and kind of running around and doing Spider-Man stuff. But it's Doc Ock, and he's a dick. So he's doing all this horrible, crazy things. I thought, you know, Superior Spider-Man was a lot of fun, just because you did get to see a different type of Spider-Man. You know, even if though it was in Peter Parker's skin, you at least got to, you know, see like kind of a different, you know, you got to see why Peter Parker is the Spider-Man, and why maybe other characters aren't always appropriate to pick up the mantle, you know, which is why I'm really happy that Miles was such a well-developed and interesting character as well. But yes, Superior Spider-Man was a lot of fun just to see a different take on Spider-Man and a different Spider-Man story that is constantly kind of drudging up the same Peter Parker down on his luck kind of story that they've done for the past 60, 70 years, you know?
Right.
And I think even in the current run, he's like a CEO of his company now. So they are at least trying to do a little bit differently with Peter, but then they have Miles to kind of still have that down-to-earth Spider-Man, you know, now that Peter's kind of grown up and matured and, you know, has become big, you know, with his company and whatnot. And we still have the ground-level, geeky, dorky, you know, Miles Morales, you know, living through his, you know, thing, but it's still very different than Peter.
So when you, you know, you talked about how it can be hard to get eyes on, like, you know, independent comic books and, you know, stuff that's not coming out from, like, you know, the probably, like, six major publishers.
Yeah.
You know, so you have... You know, you have this great idea, this, you know, this cast of, you know, cool girls that are, you know, kind of dorky and dweeby, and now they're superheroes and they're kind of like taking on those almost like, you know, archetypal roles where they're like, you know, I see these heroes in fantasy and so now I'm going to emulate them. You know, it's a cool idea. It's a fun idea. Like how do you go about like presenting it to people and like kind of pushing, I mean, besides, you know, coming on our ridiculous show, you know, actually getting, you know, getting the word out there, like what kind of things are you doing like as an independent, like comic book artist and like through fan base to like, you know, put yourself out there? Like, I guess what I'm really trying to get at is what kind of tips would you give to like other independent artists, you know, looking to get out their amazing story?
I would say definitely try to leverage as much of your networking as you can. You know, I do Facebook and Twitter. These are things I actually didn't have that much interest in before. But when I started creating my book and realizing that I wanted to actually present it, because initially I was creating the Gamma Gals kind of just for me and for my wife and, you know, kind of family and friends and whatnot. But then I decided to actually spread it out, you know, because I was so proud of it. I decided to spread it out to more people. Then I realized the power of like kind of social networking, how useful of a tool that can be. So I have my Twitter, I have my Instagram, my Tumblr, my Facebook, my DeviantArt page, my Patreon page. I have my, ArtStation portfolio, and I have all these different things. And so I try to like, you know, go on Twitter, go on Facebook, constantly talk to friends and family and, you know, friends of friends and friends of family, and just try to tell them about the book and show them the artwork or the pages or, you know, anything about it to kind of get them maybe spreading the word. And then through them spreading the word, maybe their friends will see it. Like my niece, texted me the other day and she was telling me how she tells all of her classmates about the comic and she shows them because she has one of the issues on her phone and she's always, you know, showing people the book and trying to spread the word that way and get people interested. And a few of her classmates that are really excited about, you know, comic books, but they didn't really feel that they were represented either. They're very, very excited about the book. And so hopefully, you know, that will spread the word and get more, you know, people out there. You just have to leverage your social networking, family, friends, whoever will, you know, listen and whatnot. I was on the bus reading through one of the proofs of Gamma Gals back when I printed out a physical copy using Kablam. And someone on the bus had asked me, oh, what's that? You know, I'm like, oh, it's my comic book. They're like, yours? You know, you did that? And I got to do the whole spiel about creating the book and how I'm the creator and writer, artist, and that sort of thing. And, you know, just whoever will listen, just talk about your book and be passionate about it.
That's awesome. So you're publishing it through Fanbase Press. It's coming out on Comixology, and then there's pre-orders for a physical copy of like the trade edition. How did that whole, you know, deal with Fanbase come about? Like, how did you get connected with them?
It was actually really, really cool. My friend, Vito Lapacola, who's also a writer and a actor and director and whatnot, and I've known him for probably about 20 years now, since I think I first moved out to L.A., and I was telling him about my book, because I actually finished penciling, inking, and coloring. I basically completed issues 1 through 4 of the Gamma Gals, so I was done with that, and I was just kind of doing my own self-publishing, and Vito was like, hey, you know, I'd like to introduce you to Barbara and Brian Dillon at Fanbase Press because they're such really, really cool, you know, nice, down-to-earth people. And I'm like, okay, sure. And we kind of set up a meeting and hung out and talked about all sorts of things, you know, comics, movies, you know, the usual kind of stuff. And then I asked them if, you know, Gamma Gals would be something. We talked about Gamma Gals, and I asked them if that would be something they'd be interested in maybe bringing under their banner. and they said they think about it, and they kind of deliberated, you know, over a weekend or so, and got back to me and told me that they would love to, you know, to work with me and bring the book, you know, to their, you know, audience, and hopefully a wider audience than what I had done, which was very kind of small scale, you know, self-publishing type thing. But yeah, it was really, really cool. So I owe a great deal of gratitude to Vito for introducing me to Barham & Bryant, and not even just because of the book, but they're just really, really fun, cool people to hang out with and talk to. So I just feel very, very fortunate to have more people that are, you know, good and genuine and honest living in Los Angeles that can be kind of hard to come by.
It's awesome. We've had people from Fanbase on a few times now, and everybody that we've talked
to
has been like super, super, like really gracious and like really cool people. And it's cool to see that the culture of their, you know, company is we want to make comic books that reflect like who we are, as opposed to, you know, it's not necessarily how marketable can I make this as much as I want to make a comic book that reflects characters that are me in like a fantastical light. And because there's just not that much of that around there. Like, I know when I was growing up, I read like a lot of like, you know, Dragonlance books and fantasy novels and stuff like that. And the hero's always like, you know, a giant buff white dude. And here I am, chubby Mexican kid. Like, oh man, I wish I could always relate to the dwarves, I guess.
Oh yeah. I know that feeling definitely. Like when I was growing up, like I mentioned before, like my classmates, they would, you know, tell me, oh, you can't be, you know, Superman or Batman or Spider-Man. And I'm like, why not? You know, we're playing on the playground. I want to play these characters. They're like, oh, you can't do that because you're black. And I would go home and I feel bad about it. And I go home and I turn on the TV and sure enough, there'd be, you know, He-Man and She-Ra and, you know, so many other TV shows and cartoons that I absolutely loved and adored, but the lead was almost always a white guy, you know, or, you know, a white woman, which is actually kind of interesting. Me and my wife were talking about a lot of the cartoons in the 80s were actually very, very surprisingly progressive, like Jim and the Holograms and She-Ra and all these sorts of things. And I love those cartoons. I watched She-Ra, I watched Jim. You know, it didn't matter if it was a female lead or even a white male lead. It didn't really matter. It's just, you know, just being cool cartoons with, you know, people doing badass stuff. But then I did start to realize that there weren't a lot of characters that looked like me. And I didn't know characters that like Falcon or Black Panther or John Stewart version of Green Lantern. I didn't know those characters existed because growing up in Wisconsin, they didn't have that many comic book shops. So I would have to buy my comic books from like a Walgreens that was right down the street. And I didn't have much money in the first place, so I could only buy like one comic. And usually the comic rack at Walgreens was always like the Marvel DC stuff, but it was mainly Spider-Man, Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman, and then a bunch of Archie comics. And I usually bought the Archie ones because they were the cheapest, but there weren't that many, you know, comic books. I didn't know Black Lightning or, you know, a lot of those characters existed. And I think I would have gravitated a lot towards those characters simply because, you know, they looked like me, or they may not have acted like me or talked like me, but they looked like me. And that was such an important kind of thing to have growing up, to have that kind of representation that's positive and, you know, very well-rounded three-dimensional characters instead of the raging stereotypes that, you know, we get, especially being minorities, looking at the entertainment industry and movies and television and whatnot. So I really, really wanted to create a book that I hoped would be inclusive for everybody, not just, you know, minorities, not just women. I want everybody to enjoy the book. Like, the whole point of the book is to be a fun kind of 1960s style throwback of, you know, superhero comics that aren't too serious. They're not overly silly. There can be some serious stuff in there, but for the most part, they're just meant to be fun. But I figured, why not let women and minorities have, you know, fun as well, be part of that fun, be included in the awesome world saving, you know, kind of kicking ass and taking names and beating up bad guys and whatnot. So I hope everybody enjoys Gamma Gal, but I definitely really hope that minorities and women can get something out of it and feel a bit more hardened that there are at least characters that look like them and act like them, maybe not, I don't know, but hopefully the books are just fun.
So I grew up in a pretty small town, like, you know, Northern Colorado and stuff. So I remember when, you know, there was like one comic book shop in town, but they kind of like catered to like weirder stuff. And so I ended up reading a lot of weird stuff, like way, way too young. But I also remember the era. I remember the era of the spinner rack or like the magazine section where there were comic books, you know, sitting about. Like, how do you feel like growing up in like kind of a small town at that point where, you know, you were, you know, buying comic books at the grocery store and stuff. Like, how do you think that kind of like influenced like your taste in like art and comics and like pop culture, just kind of in general?
It definitely influenced the type of things I used to draw and create back growing up. Like, it's interesting. A lot of the times when you're discussing diversity and representation in the entertainment industry, people tell you that you should, like, oh, if minorities or women want to see themselves in fiction, why don't they create these things themselves? But growing up, when you're young and kind of impressionable, I was basically just mimicking the things that I saw on television. So I was looking through some of my old portfolios of, like, things I had drawn when I was in high school and middle school, and they almost always featured white guys, white women. The minority characters are kind of supporting characters, side characters. So even, you know, me being the black guy creating comic books, I was still creating the status quo, basically. So seeing just that on the shelves, it just kind of definitely influenced that that kind of a mindset. When I'm sitting down to create, I would always kind of default to good-looking white guy or a good-looking white woman and that sort of thing. And then it really wasn't until high school when a buddy of mine introduced me to Spawn from Todd McFarlane, and that just blew my mind, just seeing a comic book with that kind of artwork, that kind of coloring from Image Comics. And then when I learned that Spawn was actually a black guy, that kind of blew my mind too. I'm like, holy shit, I just assumed he was a white guy with a burned off face.
That kind of blew everybody's mind.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I'm like, holy shit, this guy, because I didn't get in until issue 12 or 13 of Spawn, so I kind of missed a lot of the early kind of formative stuff about the character Al Simmons and whatnot, but I didn't care because I was just in love with Tom McFarlane's artwork at the time. I'd never seen any of his work before. Even on Spider-Man comics, I hadn't seen it. So, yeah, that just definitely kind of changed the trajectory of what I wanted to do in general. I wanted to be an animator for Disney and do, you know, animation and that sort of thing. And then once I hit 14 and got into high school, I went to the Milwaukee High School of the Arts, and I was a visual arts major there. And, all of my friends, you know, kind of had a bunch of art classes. 3 hours of my school day was just art, so that was like a dream come true. I would just sit and draw in my classes for 3 hours, so it was great. Yeah, he introduced me to Spawn and Image and that sort of thing, and then I'm like, wow, this is what comic books are like. I was used to the Batman stuff, the Superman stuff. I never got to read the heavier kind of Batman, Superman stuff, the Frank Miller stuff or the Alan Moore stuff. And when I saw that, you know, comics could be like this kind of mature and adult or just crazy, bloody, violent. I was 14, so anything bloody and violent was cool to me back then. So I'm like, oh, man, I want to do this. This is the kind of stuff I want to draw. And it kind of really pushed me to draw comic books of Todd McFarlane. And that's when I decided, hey, I want this to be, you know, kind of what I want to do. I want to do this basically for the rest of my life. I learned about how much I love telling stories in pictures and telling stories in sequential art. I used to dabble in it prior to that I would do the animation and flip books. But I'd draw little comic strips here and there and comics and whatnot. But I really didn't decide to sit down and want to create comic books until high school. And I've been basically doing it ever since.
Nice.
And the Gamma Gals was a challenge to me. Challenge because I hadn't actually finished any comics in all those years of drawing comic books since I was 14. 30 years of drawing comic books, I never actually finished one. So I kind of laid down the gauntlet to myself when I created the Gamma Gals. I'm like, you're going to sit down and you're going to do these 22 pages. Even if you just do one 22-page issue, I want to prove to myself that I can actually do it and not make excuses for not doing it. Like, oh, I don't have a letter, or I don't have a colorist, or I don't have a inker, or, you know, whatever, a writer, some things like that. It's like, instead of waiting for someone else to do those portions of the work for me, and then I do my art thing, it's like, no, just do it all. So I did the writing and the penciling and inking and coloring and lettering, and I may not be the best at the lettering and all that kind of thing, but it didn't matter. I didn't want to make an excuse to not get my book done and do it. And so finishing issue number one of the Gamma Gals was super confidence building for me, just knowing that, hey, I have it in me. I could actually finish a 22-page comic book. And then to finish the other three issues and to have, you know, a four-issue miniseries, you know, to kind of complete. I'm like, even if I don't draw another comic book and finish it, I at least have this thing that I could say, hey, if I wanted to sit down and finish a comic book, I can do it. And then I finished issue number five like last week or a week ago or so. So nice. It's coming along really nicely with the Gamma Gals. I'm very, very happy with it. And issues 5 and 6 are actually going to be included in the graphic novel collection.
Oh, very cool.
So I'm working on finishing. Yeah, so I'm working. It's like two extra bonus issues, you know, just for incentive for people. It's like they read the first four issues and they have these two extra 22-page issues to do. And that was another separate challenge of how to tell a complete kind of 22-page story just in that one, you know, kind of issue.
Like how to do a one-shot, basically.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. It was a nice challenge for me. So I did issues 5 and 6, the 2 standalone issues. They're 2 separate stories that take place in Halloween and Christmas. And yeah, it was just a nice challenge to see if I could, you know, as a writer, because I spent so much of my life drawing, spent the last 20 years writing, I guess, and spending the last 37 years drawing. So I wanted to really hone my kind of writing skills. And yeah, doing the 22-page comic is a pain in the butt. Like trying to write that, like writing the script and try to condense the story to the kind of the most important aspects of the story. And to do that in 22 pages is pretty tough. It's fun, though. It's fun, but it's tough.
That's awesome. It's almost like, how do I make an outline into a full body story?
Yeah.
So I like, as you were talking, you know, about the inclusivity of like the characters and like, you know, how you represent, you know, different races and different, you know, sexualities and all this other stuff. How do you look at creating the villains too? Like, you know, I feel like it would be really easy to fall into the trap of like all of the villains are evil white men.
Yeah.
Like, I was actually joking about that. how do you, you know, go about creating the villains? Like, you know, do you make an attempt at like nuanced and diverse villains as well?
That's definitely the plan. It's really funny because I was telling my wife basically the kind of the first 2 major villains of the Gamma Gals are evil white dudes. And I'm like, oh man, this is not what I intended to do, but it's like the first kind of person they battle is one of the bullies in their school. Although he's not actually, he's not just white. He's, he is Puerto Rican and white. He's mixed. But then there's the typical Lex Luthor CEO villain, Dallas Dixon, and he's a white guy. But I just sit down and try to think, like a casting director when I'm kind of creating the characters that are going to appear in an issue. Like, I used to always sit down and think, okay, he's, you know, this person and he's going to be white and she's going to be white and that sort of thing. But now I just kind of think, you know, about, I was looking at casting a TV show or a movie and I'm like, it doesn't necessarily, when I sit down to create like a police officer, I don't think the police officer has to just be a white guy or a black guy or anybody. I try to like broaden the net. I'm like, he can be, you know, Persian or Indian or Sri Lankan or Chinese or Korean or Japanese. It doesn't really matter. I just try to think outside of the box that I'm kind of used to creating in for so long based off of how much I'd seen. But I still don't exclude. I try not to exclude, like, if the villain's going to be a white guy, he's going to be a white guy. If it's going to be a black guy, it's going to be a black guy. If it's going to be a woman, it's going to be a woman. It doesn't really matter. But I definitely just try to be a little bit more cognizant at how I'm portraying certain ethnicities. There will be villains that are going to be all sorts of different backgrounds and where they come from and those sorts of things. But for the most part, I just try not to box myself into just creating a white guy or a black guy or whatnot. One of the villains that's coming up is going to be, I'm still debating. I haven't actually decided what ethnicity this villain's going to be. She's kind of like a sorceress, summoner kind of person that's going to appear in the next volume. Like issue seven through 10 is going to have a cool story arc that I'm working on. But I'm still trying to figure out, like, I haven't even talked about ethnicities, but not.
So, Stefano, where can people find, find you on Twitter and Instagram, Facebook, all that stuff? And how can they get a hold of a copy of Gamma Gals?
Yeah, at Stefano Terry. I think it's capital S, capital T. At Stefano Terry on Twitter, and I believe the Gamma Gals is on Twitter at the Gamma Gals. So, and Gamma Gals can be picked up at Fanbase Press. They also have their Twitter at Fanbase_Press. And Facebook. There's a Gamma Gals Facebook page. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. You can pretty much just Google. Like, if you Google Stefano Terry, I'm usually pretty much the first person that kind of pops up, and the Gamma Gals is the first thing that pops up when you type in the Gamma Gals. So it's not too difficult to find me.
Nice. That is exactly what I just did.
Yeah, it should pop up. It's pretty much like the first thing that pops up, which is really, really cool. When I type in the Gamma Gals, I'm like, hey, that's me.
It's funny. My name is Gabe Giannis. So if I Google myself, there's like this 50-50 chance that either I'm going to be at the top of the list or this guy named Gabe Giannis that's like an executive producer on like all sorts of like TV shows like Grey's Anatomy. Oh, wow. And stuff like that.
Nice.
It was also funny the first time he rolled in the credits, one of my friends was like, dude, do you work on Grey's Anatomy? I'm like, not that I'm aware of.
I typed in my name in Google once, and there's this other guy on Facebook. He was this Italian guy, and his name was actually Stefano Terry. And I'm like, oh, wow. I'm like, someone actually is named like Stefano Terry. Usually when I type in my name, like, I'll find a bunch of Italian names since it's an Italian name. And so I went to Facebook and I actually added him. And then he messaged me back and was like, who are you? Why are you adding me to Facebook? I'm like, because we have the same name. And he's like, oh, okay, that's fine. And he accepted my friend request. Yeah, he accepted the friend request. But I just thought that was really funny. And then I think I deleted him because he turned out to be like a racist bigot. So I'm like, Jesus, there's a Stefano Terry out there being a racist asshole and smearing my good name. So I had to remove him off the friends list.
That's funny. You should have like a plot line about that where one of the girls Googles herself and finds like the evil version of herself.
That would be hilarious. That would be hilarious. And then she goes about trying to like, you know, make sure everyone knows that that's not her. Yeah, that would be a lot of fun. I like doing little standalone things. So I'm going to actually, in between issues and in between story arcs, let these first six issues kind of have their little thing. And then in between those, I think I'm going to sit down and do 10-page little mini stories about other characters in the Gamma Gals universe, some of the supporting characters that maybe don't get a lot of screen time in the main meat of the comic book. Because I think it'd be fun drawing exercise, anything to, you know, keep me drawn and practicing and improving. But I think it'd be really fun to kind of have a little short like that, like one of those kind of mixed identity type things.
That's awesome. I like that we may have given birth to a new story.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You just have to credit me. No, just...
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Awesome. Well, Stefano, definitely. Thank you.
I'm trying to get my wife to write one.
Yeah. I try to get my wife to participate in this all the time, but really all she ever wants to do is yell at me on the podcast. About how I ate her chips.
She's a writer, and she's come up with a few characters that will probably make an appearance, but I'm trying to convince her to write an actual issue and not just... give me some story stuff. But yeah, she writes, you know, novels and short stories and whatnot. So it's just trying to convince her to try comic book script.
That's awesome.
It would be fun.
Well, Stefano, thank you so much for being on the show. We really appreciate it. And I can't wait
thank you for having me.
Can't wait to read more about Gamma Gals.
Thank you so much. It was great being here. Thank you so much for having me.
This is Robert Kurtzman, and you're listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box.
Here's a few reasons why you should be listening to the Unwritable Rant podcast with host Juliette Miranda. She can tell a great story.
If you can't play dead, play drunk. And it works, I swear.
She interviews celebrities that have great stories.
If we have a cousin that's kind of strange, we don't put him away or tuck him away. We set him on an old dryer out in the front yard with alcohol and let him wave at people.
Right. And then you tell your friends about it.
And she's tolerant and loves kids.
So these kids go running up after the ball, and I stand up and I yell, "Kids die in the street all the time!"
So head on over to theunwritablerant.com and listen to the show.
One. Way one.
We're recording, by the way.
And we're back!
That was creepy.
Yeah. There's like spit on this mic, so you may want to mic it. Mark it.
Mic it?
You may make it, man. Can you make fun? You might want to mark it for future reference. This is the game.
This is the HIV one.
Got the AIDS? Got the full-blown AIDS?
So John said he just got to the store and he'll join us here in a little bit.
Nice. So.
News, part one, segment one.
Segment one.
Uno.
Giant news happened as we're recording.
Yes.
At age 61, the actor Bill Paxton has been in Aliens, been in Predator movies,
Shield,
been in Near Dark,
Weird
Agents
Science,
of Shield,
Commando.
Just fucking everything cool.
Twister.
Yeah.
You were saying that as I was saying it, okay?
Hey, Twister is the perfect example of a movie that you can watch precisely once and have it be awesome. Like the first time you see it, like, oh, the spectacle of it's so amazing. And then the second time you're like, yeah, I've seen a Kyle fly through the air already. I don't know. But yeah, huge bummer. Like he was in surgery, there were complications, and he passed away.
So yep.
He just released the pilot for Training Day. I mean, like, he was a prolific and busy actor.
Yeah,
like he was doing stuff, and that's all gone now. So
sad.
Yeah.
Fuck 2017.
That's not why though.
That's a lot of why. That's a little why.
I hope we don't have that same like the end of 2016 when like a gajillion celebrities died.
No.
Stop it. Stop killing my childhood.
Well, you're old. I mean, things start to die after a while, Gabe. Yeah,
thanks. Thanks for bringing that up. Can't wait for all my heroes to be dead, you fucking asshole.
I'll be dirty 30 next month.
Dirty 30?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Is that butt stuff time?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Getting some butt stuff. Obviously catching.
Yeah, probably.
Oh, man. But on a serious note, you know, Bill Paxton was a fucking genius, great actor. And our thoughts go out to his family. That sucks. It kind of sucks to like.
I wonder what was going on. It just says all the posts I've read just say surgery. So I wonder what was going on.
It'll be awful if it was like his appendix or something like super simple that they do all the time.
Right.
You know, he's getting his tonsils removed or something ridiculous. You know,
Botox.
I hope not. I hope it wasn't plastic surgery. That would be shitty.
That would be shitty.
Like, let's not think about it. Bill Paxton, I'll probably watch Near Dark tonight in your honor, sir. You're a ghost now, so you can hear what I'm saying. It's awesome.
He's here with us.
You don't know. We don't know how that shit works.
I don't, and I don't want to find out quite yet.
Right now, Bill Paxton might have his dick in your ear.
I know. Feels all weird.
Why is my ear all itchy?
Oh, man. News, Patrick Stewart, he's leaving the X-Men. He's retiring. So not only are they losing Logan, they're losing Hugh Jackman, they're losing Patrick Stewart as well. So who cares about X-Men anymore?
Who cares about X-Men anymore anyways? Like, I mean, so I watched X-Men Apocalypse, I think.
That was the last one.
No, so the one before it, Days of Future Past.
Okay.
It was okay. Like, it was a halfway decent movie, but it wasn't, like, anything so super exciting right. that I had to watch
and
it or own
those
it.
Are the two main draws. I mean, you know, it's the reason why most people watch those movies to begin with.
And, like, I want to see Logan because it looks like a good movie, not because it's an X-Men movie. Like, it just looks good. You know, I was reading an article today. This fits into this a little bit. Where Rob Liefeld, who is participating in the X-Force movie, wants Russell Crowe to be Cable. No, I don't want that. Like, stop.
How dare you?
Stop ruining X-Force, Rob Liefeld. Seriously, someday he's going to be on this show and be like, Gabe, you're an asshole. But
you dick.
But, I mean, it's just in the hands of anybody except for Marvel proper, it seems like they just can't get a grip.
Anybody.
On those movie franchises.
Maybe DC should just hire Marvel to do their movies.
Oh, Jesus. Right. I mean, on top of it, I was also reading an article that Fox will not make a Fantastic Four movie unless they get it, quote unquote, 100% right. And quote unquote, unless it has the right tone. It's like,
but they have to.
You've had fucking four shots at it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Just let it go. Just, you're not going to pull this off. Let it go.
And they have to. They have to. At some point, if you don't make the movie, the rights revert back. So they have to do something at some point with it.
Right.
So it's bullshit. They're going to cut instead of either one, letting it go, or two, saying, okay, we're going to spend all of this time to try and make a really good movie. It's going to come down to the last minute and they're going to make another shit movie.
Exactly.
It's what it boils down to.
How do we get the Silver Surfer in this one to look less crappy? And that'll be like the selling point. Oh, look!
They just paint him.
Look how good Silver Surfer looks. Never mind that the movie's straight garbage. I don't know. It's that whole situation. Like, it makes you wonder if Marvel just constantly kicks themselves in the ass for selling the rights to those in the first place.
But I mean, from what I remember, it was a point in time where they had to. I mean, there was no choice. They were going to go bankrupt if they didn't cash flow.
Now only we could get Marvel to write interesting comic books.
I like it.
I like some of this.
I guess I can jump into, that's a good segue into what I read. I read like 15. I read like 15 issues of Amazing Spider-Man. I read a lot of stuff lately. It was weird. The stack of shit I read was ginormous.
Nice.
Because I had two short boxes on my dinner table and I needed to get rid of one of them. So
I feel like that was a mandate, not a, oh man, I really need to declutter. I think that was like, get this shit off my table
one. It's in the, there's only four of us. It was in the fifth space. So I just needed it out. I haven't read anything in a while. And that was, I literally read like 30 books one day just while I was off.
Nice.
Walking around the house, just reading books. I like the Spider-Man stuff. It's cool because it's not just Spider-Man anymore. It's, you get Iron Man and you get, you know, Pepper's in there, and there's a bunch of kind of little mixes of different people, and Doc Ock is coming back to try and like, it's just his, because I don't know if you're familiar with what's going on, but it's just, now it's just his, like, not necessarily his brain, but his, like,
his mind,
his soul, or whatever you want to call it. But he's trying to figure out how to get back to a real body, and that's interesting to me. That plus there's a giant overarching storyline about I cannot remember the character's name. The Jackal, I think, maybe, but he's cloning supervillains, and he's got like a pill that you have to take in order to stay alive. So that's how he kind of keeps you in his little group.
Right. He basically is like a drug pusher.
Right.
Like I keep you in control by giving you the drug you need.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So it's cool to see that. And then Doc Ock try and outwit the guy at the same time as trying to find his own body again. So I was really, I was excited to be able to hammer that out. I love Spider-Man, but I like that it's not just him. It's
nice.
There's a ton of different kind of things going on in the book that I really enjoy.
That's cool. So I finished a book, like a book,
a real book.
Week. Yeah.
What?
So I was at work and
Playboy.
What's that?
Playboy.
No, that's a magazine.
Oh, true. Yeah, you're right.
And it doesn't even have naked ladies in it anymore.
They're going back to naked people again.
Of course they are, because why in the world would somebody buy a Playboy with no naked ladies? They're instantaneously disproving every asshole's been, I read it for the articles. No, you don't. Like, no, you don't.
It's nothing but articles now.
Yeah.
Read it.
Why aren't you buying it, then? Huh? So one of my friends at work was reading this book, and it's an old book, and I've never heard of it before. I think it's the novelization of like an after school special, okay? Or okay. like that kind of show, but it's a novelization of a movie called The Wave. And The Wave is based on a real incident sort of that happened in a school where this teacher who wanted to teach his kids, you know, how easy it is to like slip into like fascism and Nazism, effectively creates like this fake Nazi subculture like within the school, and it goes like off the rails like within 2 weeks, where kids are like, you know, doing their little wave salute and having rallies and like demanding speeches from people, and like the one kid that like he's like the loser kid, but he latches onto it and it kind of totally changes who he is as a person. At one point comes up to the teacher and is like, I'll be your bodyguard because you need a bodyguard. Teacher's like, okay, and we've gone too far. Like, you know, it was a good book. It was interesting. Like, you know, from a analytical point of view, as far as like politics go, it's definitely like an oversimplification of like the whole Nazi Germany situation.
Sure.
but, and the end of it is like this really weird thing where he does this thing and kind of shocks the kids into realizing that, hey, this is what I was trying to do, is show you how easy it is to slip into this. And all the kids are like, oh, okay, we'll stop.
We're done.
Yeah. And it's like, that's not like, most of those kids were probably like psychologically damaged because of it. And I guarantee you there were like at least 4 or 5 jocks were like, fuck that, I'm still part of this. Like, and if you don't belong, I will beat your ass.
Yeah. Like, meet us outside.
Yeah. So it was a good book. It was interesting. Definitely intended for like that middle school age kind of kid, you know, and less a reflection of how to not fall into fascism and more of a reflection of how to not just succumb to peer pressure all the time. So it was good. It was a cool book. I'm glad I read it. I also picked up, I lost my notes. That's the second time I've done that today.
That's okay. I'm going to jump in.
Okay.
I read Hellblazer, the Rebirth stuff.
Yeah.
Somehow
that didn't end up in my pool, and I'm not really sure how, and that bums me out.
So I enjoy the story. It's a good story.
Uh-oh.
You don't know where I'm going with this,
no,
asshole.
No, I can see your face. You're all, so I enjoy the story.
No, I like the story, but...
But?
I'm not a big fan of the art. Oh, okay. I'm not a big fan of the... He looks... I mean, I get what Constantine is supposed to look like. Like, he doesn't always look the best because he's a smoker and he treats his body like shit and, you know. But the drawing looks too over the top. Like, he looks like skeletons. Like, it just looks like he's dead all of the time in the drawing. And I'm not it just is weird. It's just over the top to me. I like the new 52 the way he was drawn. This looks... It just, I don't know. It looks like he's never eaten anything in his life. You know what I mean? It just looks really odd to me. And you know, I don't know. I haven't read the old Hellblazer stuff, like the old stuff. So I'm not familiar with what that art looks like. And maybe it looks a lot like the new stuff.
No, it's more like it's very traditional, like 90s comic booky kind of style. Like it was. If you think about like how Sandman and stuff looks, it looks more like that.
Okay.
Where it's still very inventive and like creative, but it's still kind of trapped in that like realm of, you know, six panels per page kind of thing of the time. So
I don't know. It doesn't look it almost doesn't look finished when I look at it. I don't know, it's weird. Like I said, I love the story. I like Constantine. He's one of my favorite characters, but the art is just off to me. It's not terrible. It's because just... I can't draw for shit, so I'm not judging anybody's drawing like that, but it just looks a little off to me. That's it. It just looks a little different. And I don't know that I totally enjoy that part. No, but it's a good story. I really enjoyed it. I think I read the first 3 of them, I think.
Nice.
But it seemed off to me. I don't know why.
So on the same creepy and magic note, I read 2 things that kind of fit into that bill. I've been catching up on Harrow County, which still... Illustration-wise, one of my favorite books. I love the watercolor technique that he uses for it. It just gives it this really cool, soft, like old-timey movie feel a lot of the time. And then Cullen Bunn is fucking killing it with the story. Like, it's seriously one of my favorite comic books out right now, still. For Christmas, like, I don't get to see my friend Steve very often, so for Christmas, a couple weeks ago, I got, he got me...
A couple weeks
Well,
ago.
He got it for me for Christmas, but I haven't seen him, so...
Okay.
So, Super Bowl Sunday, we went over to his house, and he's like, hey, I got you this book for Christmas. I was like, yes! But, he got me...
I love Christmas!
It's the best! You're like my big half-black Santa Claus!
Oh, that's fucked
And then
up.
He was like, come sit on my lap.
Oh,
and I was like,
hey.
Yeah. I mean, hey,
that
Steve.
Turned
I know
weird.
You listen to the show. So. It's my hetero life mate, Steve. he got me a copy of Henry and Glenn Forever and Ever, which is the sequel to Henry and Glenn Forever, which is a comic. And like comic, I mean like a comic strip,
like a strip.
Kind of style art. It's done in the same way that like a regular comic book would be done, but it's a very cartoony version of Henry Rollins and Glenn Danzig. And they are gay lovers.
Okay.
They are very much in love with each other. Their neighbors are Hall and Oates, who are devil worshippers.
Okay. Oh.
And the whole thing is full of like all these references to like, you know, 80s and 90s punk and metal. And like all of the characters are like, you know, famous in those communities. Like the way Henry Rollins and Glenn Danzig meet each other is that Glenn Danzig's mom sends him to school in a sailor boy outfit, and Ian McKay from Minor Threat pantses him. And so Henry Rollins sticks up for him, you know, when they're little kids, and they've been together ever since, you know. But it's a cool book because like the story proper involves Glenn Danzig's mom showing up and him and Henry inadvertently creating a zombie apocalypse to get rid of her. And it's like super funny and dorky. And like Lemmy from Motorhead shows up in a tank. And like, it's just, it's ridiculous. It's off the wall. It's super, super funny.
He's dead. So he could have been a zombie too.
He could have been. Yeah. This was written before he was dead though. So, if you like the humor on this show, that it's that speed
nice.
Of humor.
Okay.
Like there's a scene where Hall and Oates are in a sex shop looking for Glenn Danzig. And one of them is holding a butt plug that's like a giant fist. And he goes to hand it to the other guy and says, I'm going to send this to your mother. You know, I mean, it's that speed of humor, you know. The backups in the book, because only about half of the book is the story proper. And right. then the other half of the book is all these like one-off little stories about Henry and Glenn done by other artists and other writers. Oh,
that's cool.
But it's written by Tom Neely, who is the guy that does The Humans, which is okay. the Monkey Motorcycle Gang.
Oh,
book.
Okay. Yeah, so yeah, okay.
It's that kind of like music and violence and hilarious and dick jokes and just like it's 100% right up my alley. And I can't wait. I got to go back and pick up the first volume.
Nice.
But it's, oh man, it's a good time. I can't recommend it enough, especially if you're a fan of like hard music and comic books. It's like this weird, like, here's this entrant from someone that like actually knows what they're talking about.
Right.
Like a lot of time punk rock in like comic books is like the 80s stereotype, right. stupid version of it. And it's like, here's all these references to hilarious bands and like, you know, there's a scene where Glenn Danzig goes to do bar karaoke with a live band, and the live band is all the dudes from Guns N' Roses except for Axl Rose. You know, I mean, it's that kind of stuff.
Axl went missing.
Yeah. Dude, I had a friend that used to be a delivery driver for a liquor store in the town that Axl Rose lived in California.
Right.
And he would deliver, like, not shitting you, 5 to 10 cases of alcohol to that dude's house every single day.
Jesus.
Like, because he obviously is like a heavy, heavy drinker.
Right.
And then on top of it, he always just has people at his house. Like, because you can't.
Because he's Axl Rose.
You can't get rid of that kind of money. Shit. Like, you know, that dude still gets residuals for Guns N' Roses songs. Yeah. Like, he's like.
People, I'm sure, still buy his CDs. Like,
people buy CDs?
Yes, people buy CDs.
I don't know about that. I pay for a Spotify subscription, so I don't have to buy CDs. Spotify, sponsor us.
Oh, man. Speaking of funny stuff.
And Spotify and sponsoring us right now.
Well, yeah, I mean that too. But Ash vs. Evil Dead is the same way. I mean, not so much.
For the record, it totally sounded like you said Ass versus the Evil Dead.
That's funny.
It's like, I don't know what you're talking about. Oh, yeah.
Not so much musically inclined, but it's the same. I mean, Ash is always fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
And the Fury Road, I read.
And you're talking about the comic book Ash.
The comic book. Yeah. So I read another, I think three of them, Fury Road. And that's another amalgamation of people. It has him, it has Dracula, it has Frankenstein. Like, it has a bunch of different elements to it that make it cooler than just Ash.
And that's already like top of the charts. Okay, fucking
I
love cool.
it. I think it's funny. Yeah. But it, the other and it's him fighting his self from the movie when he split into two
good Ash and evil Ash.
Which one is it? Is that Army of Darkness?
That's Army of Darkness.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay, yeah, yeah. That's so he's fighting himself. It's good Ash versus evil Ash. And it's just fucking hilarious. I can't.
You said that wrong. You're the good Ash, I'm the bad Ash.
So dumb, but it's hilarious. It's the type of comedy that I love. Just dumb and nobody likes him, and that's why it's even funnier because he says shit that makes me laugh, and none of the characters in the book laugh at him, and I think that's what makes it more funny to me. I just love it. Anything Ash, and I've said it before, anything Ash that's in my pool brightens my day up because it's hilarious.
It's always funny. It's always just goofy and gory and over the top. I mean, it's always a good day when I can convince my wife to let me watch Army of Darkness. Like she had like roommates that they owned like three movies. It was like Lion King, Army of Darkness, and some other random thing. And so they just watched those right. three movies. And so she's seen Army of Darkness so many times that even now, like 20 years later, I'm like, we should watch Army of Darkness. She's like, I just watched that like 20 years ago.
It's hard to be. I mean, the Evil Dead 1
is intense.
Probably one of the best movies.
Yeah, it's good.
One of the best horror movies in, you know, ever made, in my opinion. But out of the three, I don't know if I like it the best. I think Army of Darkness for me is probably the better of the three movies.
I think it's what solidifies like the the character of Ash.
Right.
It takes him out of just like, you know, interacting with monsters. In the first one, he's not very goofy at all. In the second one, he's super, super goofy, like to a point where he's like, wow, kind of what's going on here sort of thing. But in the third one, you realize, oh, that's who he is. He's the smart ass that stumbled into like a shit show.
And he stumbles his way through everything.
And like just is so dumb that he like – he's like the guy that's so dumb he gets everything right.
He's so dumb that he's smart.
Yeah. He's come full circle.
I think it's like
when you're so ugly that people are like, you're cute in like a weird way.
I think you're right though. It's
for the reference, how I've got every woman ever.
It takes him out of, because the first two movies are set in one place, and that's it. And you don't really get to interact with, I mean, it doesn't get to talk to other people aside from like when shit's going crazy.
Right.
So you don't get to see a lot of his personality or a lot of, you know, he doesn't get to talk a lot, where that's totally different in the third one. And
it's literally all he does.
Yeah. And like I said, I think that's why I think that that's probably the better of the three movies, in my opinion. I was a fan of the fourth one, but it's nothing compared to the first three.
The remake of the original.
It wasn't really a remake. It was kind of a sequel, kind of a remake. I don't know.
Like,
kind of
like number two is.
Yeah.
Evil Dead 2 is kind of the sequel remake.
Okay, shout out to Tim Husky for putting a butt plug on my fucking...
In your ass.
No. Fuck no.
It's on the mirror.
Oh, that's funny.
I came like my five-year-old. It's like, what's that?
Oh, hey, Bill Paxton died. All right, what were we talking about? What are we talking about? You might like this one. Daniel Craig, he has an on-again, off-again relationship with fucking James Bond.
He fucks James Bond?
Yeah, that too. But they're saying he might come back again. Like, I'm over it. Just either come back or don't fucking come back.
I didn't know. I thought you were just, Owa was going to be it.
No, he's so apparently the article I read says that none of the crew wants him to leave. So everybody is saying, you have to come back, come back, come back. And at the beginning of that, he said, I don't want to fucking come back. But now I guess in the last couple months, he's softening and saying, well, maybe I'll miss it so much.
Basically enough people have pestered him. Yeah. He's like, all right, shut up. I'll do it.
But I mean, the last two James Bond movies have been the highest grossing James Bond movies ever.
Right.
So, I mean, obviously money's got to play into maybe why he would come back, but it's time to shit or get off the pot. I'm tired of hearing about it.
Yeah.
And I love James Bond.
Speaking of shit or get off the pot, they finally put the final coffin nail into Hellboy 3. Guillermo del Toro came out and just said, look, we're not doing it. Like,
damn it.
So that was lame. I was upset about that. Also, total bullshit level, 1 million.
Okay, careful. I almost spilled my whole cup of coffee earlier moving that.
So basically, the reality of the situation is that every day when I come home, I just want to watch two TV shows. Like, I'll watch other stuff after that.
I know. You don't ever want to watch anything that we actually
want to talk about. But I just want to watch The Daily Show and At Midnight. All right? That's it. That's all I care about. I want to come home. I want to laugh at Donald Trump and his fucking dumb fucking face, and then I want to laugh at...
Well, you can do that at work.
I know.
Just make him your background photo.
I don't know.
Then you could go... God.
You look like such an idiot. Oh, wait, that's Alec Baldwin.
That was funny.
So
that was really funny.
So Viacom had a deal with Hulu.
Viacom Dios?
No, Viacom, the company. They had a deal with Hulu for tons of programming that is owned by Viacom through many different stations, including Comedy Central, Logo, and MTV. They couldn't come to an agreement, so they just let their deal expire. So from 2 weeks ago, Daily Show and At Midnight were on Hulu. The next Monday, gone. Like, there are no new episodes. They're not putting out new episodes. They're not talking about it. There's no nothing. So thanks
on Hulu.
So thanks to Viacom for being fucking douche nozzles about TV that people are actively watching, like RuPaul's Drag Race, one of the most popular shows on Hulu. So's At Midnight. So's The Daily Show. And they're just like, yeah, whatever. We don't care about that particular venue of watching.
But I thought I heard somebody say you could still go to Comedy Central and watch all of the
episodes. You can go to Comedy Central and you can watch the last four episodes, but there's no way to get it onto your TV, like unless you can actually internet onto your TV.
Right.
I could watch it on my broke-ass phone. Like,
but really, that's your fault.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying, but like – do I really want to see a crack of glass down Trevor Noah's face? Not really. Like, and my headphone jack doesn't really work right.
But he's hilarious. I don't need to see his face in order for him to be funny.
We watched his stand-up special that was on Netflix, and it's unbelievable.
Nice. I'll have to watch it.
It is. I won't tell you anything about it. It's funny,
okay,
though.
Okay. I love Trevor. He does fucking hilarious.
He does great accents. Like, that's one of my favorite things about him is he does voices for, like, all these different people, and it's really funny. There's a bit about Nelson Mandela meeting Barack Obama that you're going to die over. Like, it's so good. But, I guess the full circle on that story with Viacom and Hulu is fuck you, Viacom. Like, dude, you make bajillions of dollars.
They wanted more money.
But they don't need more money. Like, that's the thing.
I need
Daily the Daily Show and At Midnight, or I will actually end up murdering someone. They're like my two
shows. Just watch The Walking Dead, and then you won't need to murder anybody.
Yeah. I don't want to pay $20 on Amazon.
For Prime? Don't you get to stream shows for free anyways on Prime?
Yeah, but it's not all of them.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
We're the second person on an Amazon Prime account, so we don't get to do any of it. So I don't know how it works. You just get free shipping? Yeah, we just get free shipping. So
that's not illegal. Amazon don't listen?
No, it's no. It's you can add other accounts to it. They just don't get the perks except for free shipping.
Speaking of At Midnight, one of my favorite comedians that I discovered from At Midnight, anyway, is a dude named Ron Funches. He's on a show with Danny Pudi and Alan Tudyk. called Powerless, that you may or may not have heard of.
I have not watched it yet.
So I'm four episodes into Powerless.
I heard it got better after the first one or two.
It gets better, and it's slowly getting better. Like, and you can tell that the actors that are on it have slowly been given permission to write their own jokes because the jokes have gotten, like, slowly more risque and slowly funnier. The latest episode deals with the Riddler blows up a safe, okay, and Batman obviously stops him.
Right.
Batman's never on screen. You know,
the Riddler?
You just see the door of the safe, okay? And Ron Funches and Danny Pudi's characters are basically R&D developers for Wayne Enterprises.
Which I heard was the other kind of lame thing that they did.
Yeah, they changed it from an insurance company, and the pilot that was like on YouTube of that, I thought that idea was funnier than what they do. But they find a Batarang, and the Batarang has like a GPS detection system in it. So they're like basically trying to get Batman to come get his Batarang back so that they can meet Batman. And it's like really, really funny. Like, you know, they go into a dark alley and they like get mugged, and like Batman saves them, but you never see Batman, and they're like dancing around, we met Batman, even though they didn't actually meet Batman. You know, it's clever, it's mostly funny all the time, it's a little slow of a start, and I don't know if it's going to make it. I feel like it has a lot of potential to be an absolutely hilarious show.
Right.
But it hasn't quite gotten the steam that it needs to be that show. The subplot was pretty funny, though. It's the girl that's kind of like the impetus for the show. She comes in as a manager at the R&D. And so she's everybody's boss. And they have like this kind of semi-friend, semi-antagonistic relationship. And she finds out that her fiancé is marrying the girl that he cheated on her with, kind of thing. Does that make sense?
Her fiance is marrying
her ex-fiance. Okay. I forgot a word in there. I forgot the X part.
So to get revenge, you know, she puts herself back out on the market and starts dating nice. This guy who's one of the Riddler's henchmen. And like that little, you know, he comes in one day and he's got this bruise on his face that looks like the Green Lantern ring. She's like, oh, what happened? He's like, oh, you know, I tripped and hit my face on something. Like
that's
I hit my face on a rock. And one of the, I forget which character delivers the line. He goes, does the rock look exactly like Green Lantern's ring? So it's weird. Some people see Jesus in a pancake and it like changes the subject. You know? So as the show goes on, it's getting funnier, but I don't know that it'll make it. Like I want it to. Like I want
to look at the ratings.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. So what else you got?
Something old. I've been binge watching. I don't know how I binge watch anything, but I've been binge watching Sliders.
She loves that show. She loves all that like Sci-Fi Channel.
It's amazing. I don't remember the last time I watched the show, but I'm in the middle to end of season two. But I love the show. They're just starting to get to the. Shit, what are they called? I can't remember. They kind of look like Klingons. What the hell is the name? Oh, shit, I totally forgot. But it's like a different evolutionary step in humans. So it's still the same universe, it's still the same time, everything, but this group knows how to slide, and they slide everything, like their big fucking ships and everything, and they go from world to world enslaving humans and getting them to breed, and I can't remember for why, but I love the show. It's like it's similar to Quantum Leap, you know, it's a little different, but I'm just fascinated with the show. John Rhys Davies is awesome. It's just a good show. It makes me feel good when I watch it. So I was like, I caught up with Blacklist. The Kiefer Sutherland show hasn't come back yet, so I was like, fuck, I don't know what to watch.
They keep they keep showing trailers on Hulu for the Blacklist Redemption.
That looks pretty good. I don't really understand the plot yet because it hasn't really come to fold, you know, but I like the Blacklist. I really enjoy that show, nice. But I was stuck in between not knowing what to watch anymore while I walk in the house, so that's why Sliders came up. But I'm a big fan. I like it. Hopefully I'll be able to watch all 5 seasons.
So speaking of science fiction, they released a kind of prologue, you know, long.
Alien.
It's kind of like a long form, you know, prologue for Alien called Last Supper. That's basically a get to know you for the characters.
I wasn't sure if that was going to be like the first 5 minutes of the actual movie or something, or if it was going to be totally separate.
I think it's separate. Just kind of like a, hey, these are the people that are going to be in the movie. Totally had forgotten James Franco was going to be in it. So when I saw him, I was like, all right, this could go either way. Like,
supposedly he's not in the movie a ton.
Yeah.
But I was waiting for something bad to happen because he like walked away from the table not feeling well. He had a fever or something
I think that's the idea there, because there's the girl that chokes.
Right.
You know, and there's the girl that has to take the medicine. You know, there's the two people that are over drunk. Like everybody had a little something that's like, oh, what's the shitty thing that's going to happen?
And then nothing
happens. You know? But it looks cool. I like that it really has the same visual feel as like the original Aliens movies. And it's good. I think it'll be a good time.
I'm excited. I think this will be a totally different version of Prometheus. I honestly think it's
don't say Prometheus.
Yeah, of the movie that shall not be named.
Don't say Prometheus.
Fuck you. I like Prometheus, but I think this will be a...
Don't say Prometheus.
I think this will be a good step toward the future. I think this will be a good step towards the next two movies,
I'm hoping that it kind of turns people's opinion of the franchise around.
Right.
Like, I'm in the same boat as you. I actually enjoy Prometheus, and I know... It's like a 50-50 split on our listenership, at least the vocal listenership of who likes it, who doesn't. But in general, like I hope that this kind of shores up the franchise and
kind
of brings it back to – because while I like Prometheus, it's like nowhere near as good as some of the other
movies. I feel like Prometheus as far as like
– I personally like – Alien Resurrection better than Prometheus, and people
is
hate
that,
that movie.
Fourth one. Yeah. That's the one where they cloned the white weird alien.
Yes.
Right? Yeah, it was okay.
I like that one.
I'm not a big fan of that one. I feel like Prometheus, like visually and tonally, is what Army of Darkness was to that franchise.
Yeah.
Like, they're so different from what you're used to, but I still enjoyed it.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. But I'm thinking this is going to kind of pull it together.
Right.
And there's some talk of there being, like, real subtle hints and links to the new Blade Runner movie and the Alien movie, because those two...
The new Blade... That
those
trailer
two
was
movies kind of intersect in the
right.
same universe.
I'm
like,
excited to see the new Aliens.
Yeah,
the Backburster, and there's like one other one that's different too. So I'm fucking excited to see.
There's some cool ideas that have been brought up.
Oh, it's Have you seen the trailer yet? That's what's happening in the first scene to the dude in the room. But you could see, like, you don't see the alien, but you could see his vertebrae and his back kind of going. It's crazy. It's cool.
Oh,
that's
you
what we talked
about. You
got
to listen to the episode.
Yeah. He's going
to
buy you a pair.
No.
It'll accentuate.
No.
It's going to accentuate your down your nether region.
You do have a birthday coming up.
Motherfucker. No, I just want to go see fucking Lego Batman.
Well, you can wear your camel toe underpants.
Speaking of camel toe underpants, I reread Sex Criminals Volume 1 this week.
Oh, nice.
That book's hilarious. Like, if you haven't read it,
no,
like,
I
all I can say is just go pick up the first volume, read it. It's seriously the funniest shit ever.
Nice.
Like, it's a really, really good book. If you're not familiar with the premise, it's basically these two people that when they have an orgasm, it stops time. And when they discover that they can – that they have this ability – exactly – so the girl is trying to raise money to save the library that she works at. So when she discovers this guy that can also stop time when he has an orgasm.
So how long does time stop?
It's not an extraordinary amount of time.
Or
I think
is it only stopped while you're having the orgasm?
No. It stops for like I forget how long it is. It stops for them to have time to go do something, but there are situations that they get put in where like time has started back up and they have to like have sex really quick to like make time stop again. Like,
so it's like Hero and Heroes where he can stop time but only for like a brief amount.
Yeah, but they have to have an orgasm.
Oh, okay.
So it's not like Heroes at all. But
that was a completely different show than I remember.
There's way less sex in that, I thought. But like, so the idea is to save this library, they team up to rob banks.
Nice.
But
fuck, how many banks do you need to rob to save one library?
Like one. But the problem is they're not the only people that can do it, and they're not the only people that have thought of it.
Right.
And as a consequence, there's actually a police force specifically designed to thwart people from doing this specific thing.
Do like, the police have to have orgasms too?
I believe so, yeah. Like, no, it's super funny.
Nice.
Like it's really good.
Well, to get through, because we've been going a little bit and we're running low on time, I'm going to do three things really quick with the last one because I know you'll want to talk about that one. Jurassic Park 2 is filming. Jurassic World 2, I guess, is filming right now. It's going to be different from what I hear in the sense that it's going to be more like a military movie as opposed to being in another park.
With no dinosaurs. No, just kidding. It's going to be very different. There's no dinosaurs in it.
But that – so it's moving more towards –
it's about the plants of the era.
It's taking a Fast and Furious kind of route where it's moving away from just being like a racing movie and it's not just in the park. So apparently – D'Onofrio's figuring out how to militarize dinosaurs and shit like that.
So it's Jurassic World Tokyo Drift.
Kind of. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So, but I'm excited. Yes. Yeah. Chris Pratt and the female lead who I don't know her name.
High heels.
Yeah. High heels. We'll name her High Heels. There's a new doctor about to come here pretty soon as well. This is Capaldi's last season. Supposedly like the best season so far, you know,
a lot of talk that it's a lady,
which we talked about already. And I don't, so you linked to Tilda Swinton. her being the doctor, which I think she could fucking nail. I think she could do the doctor justice really, really well. I just don't know then, do you keep the female doctor and the female companion? Because the reason we had argued for it against this the last time is that putting a female into the doctor's shoes puts her in a situation that I think not a lot of females would like, as far as her being the bumbling kind of doctor around time, not being smart about, you know, the whole time, and the companion really being the strong, smart role. So that was kind of the argument. And I think one of the older doctors wrote an article about it as well. So do you keep a female – do you think you keep a female lead as well? Or, I mean, a female companion as well as a female doctor, if that's the route that they end up going?
I mean, I don't know. It seemed like – I was looking for an article while you're talking, because it seems like I saw that there's a male companion.
And that was the con against it, is that putting the male in the companion role would essentially put a male in the role he's always been in, the stronger, smarter right. kind of piece of the puzzle, which is why when we spoke about it, I was against that, because it's been done. I like I like having a strong female companion there.
Right.
And instead of the kind of bumbling, but I think she could do an amazing job as a doctor. That's like, the only thing that would change my mind.
Like, I feel like in general, it would just be cool to like explore some of the other ideas, and maybe even like explore that doctor meeting up with some of the old companions, right. you know, like a Rory and
right.
that kind of thing. And just, there's so much room for possibility there yeah. that I think I just personally think it's a really cool idea and a cool concept, because you don't know. And
I think she'd kill it.
And he's mentioned it. Like, the doctor in episodes is like, oh man, I've always hoped that I would be a girl someday.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, he's mentioned it, so why not? I mean, even if it just lasts one season, it could be like a really great new version of Doctor Who.
And we were looking back on it. He's had, by the time this season ends, he will have had, I think, maybe one or two less episodes than all the other doctors, as far as in the new generation
nice.
Goes, which is good, because I felt like, damn, three seasons, that feels really short, but it's actually pretty normal.
Yeah.
So it's – then I'm like, oh, okay, then I guess maybe it is time for somebody new to kind of jump in. So I'm okay with the change. I'm interested to see who takes on the doctor's shoes.
Me too. It'll be interesting if they go the female route,
because
they keep hinting at it, and I feel like it seems natural. Like, it seems like a natural kind of place to do
right.
it. So
female before the black guy.
I mean, you can only break those glass ceilings one at a time, man. And black female. That's how you solve
yeah,
that issue.
And she's the companion. My last news that I think you may be on your list too, but you already spoke about it on Facebook, was the new producer for Batman, Matt Reeves. So I agree with you. It's like every other fucking DC movie that's come out so far, that they don't know what's going on. I feel like there's so many different changes, and there's so many cooks in the kitchen. Just change what these movies are supposed to feel like.
So there's this phrase that we used to say in the kitchen all the time. There's too many chiefs and not enough Indians. Where there's so many people trying to lead that,
right.
like, nobody's just doing the work. You know, they're all bickering with each other. Nobody knows what's going on. They can't come up with, like, a cohesive plot. And as a consequence, nobody's actually working. Like, everybody's just running around in circles trying, well, who should we get to direct it? And why doesn't Ben Affleck like this? And it's like those were the kind of stories that I heard out of Suicide Squad,
right.
and it's what made me like trepidatious. And I feel like I was validated in that. Like, I saw the movie, I enjoyed it more than I expected to enjoy it, but it was a fucking nightmare.
Right.
Like,
it was
just
weird.
Wasn't that
yeah.
great.
It was compiled weird.
Like, Batman versus Superman was the same way. Superman, the first Superman movie that's called Superman.
Man of Steel.
Man of Steel, that's the one. You know, same thing, like, oh, new director, new this, new that, new producer. Oh, shit, let's do this. Crap, we're on top of filming.
Right.
We don't really have a great script. We have a brand new director. Like,
oh, well,
we don't
here
know.
We go.
Yeah, let's do this. It's like,
I feel
it's
like
they're setting themselves up to fail. You have probably one of the longest running comic book franchises with the broadest spectrum of fucking villains and characters and, you know, friends and allies
right.
and fucking gear. Like, he just has seven different kinds of Batmobiles right. and a million kinds of weapons, and you can do all sorts of crazy shit with it, and they can't nail down who's going to direct the movie. Like,
I feel,
fuck you guys.
I feel like Ben Affleck is the problem. Not necessarily because he's portraying Batman, but I feel like he can't just – he's the type of person who can't just sit back and let – it happened.
Right.
Like, he has to write it. Charge. He has to direct it, and he has to be Batman. And the reason why I feel like that's true is because as soon as there was a new director, or as soon as there was talks of getting a new director, he came out and was grumbling about, well, maybe I don't want to be Batman anymore.
Right. And then like, all of a sudden was like, is Armie Hammer the new Batman?
Yeah, exactly.
Is blah, 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 this and blah, blah. It's like, God damn it. You're going to fuck up Batman. Like, how do you fuck up Batman, DC?
Just play Batman and let other people do the rest.
And it's not like they don't have a track record of fucking up Batman. Like, Batman and Robin is awful. Like, it is so bad. I mean, it killed Batman as a franchise for, like, I mean, probably like 10 years. Yeah. I mean, not just in the movies, but, like, in comic books and stuff, people were just like, meh, I'm out. I have two little things. First, I went to see House of Shadows Radio. It's basically like a live radio show.
Oh, yeah.
That my friends...
With the butt plug enthusiast.
Yeah, with Tim. Tim and Mel and I went. My friend Rob Walker is in it. I invited him to be on the show today, but then I forgot to remind him. And it was like his birthday yesterday, and I didn't want to bug him this morning. And I'm going to have him on the show sometime to talk about some of the stuff that he does, but... It was so much fun. It's like totally Tales from the Crypt style, like morality stories where, you know, the girl gets away from the killer and you don't know which one the killer is kind of thing. Or like a dude gets bit by a werewolf but doesn't want to admit it.
Right.
You know, the girl has a witch put a love spell on a guy. And as he's like running across the street to get with her, he gets hit by a truck. And since nothing, quote unquote, will stop their love, his, you know, reanimated corpse shows up on her doorstep, you know, that kind of stuff. And it was just, it was a ton of fun. I mean, I can't recommend it enough. We'll have them on the show because I think they're going to kind of try to, as they're doing more, this is the second one they've done. They want to do a third one. As they do more, I keep putting it in Rob's ear, you should do this as a podcast so nice. That people can download it and listen to it.
Maybe we should go be a part of it.
I know. I'm going to try. They did an ad for the Nerd Store as one of their ad things. I'm going to try to. I'm going to try to get an ad as us.
We don't like the Nerd Store.
Well, I don't care.
We don't like the Nerd Store. All right. You just don't want to say it.
I just don't want to say it because I'm not mean.
I'll say it for you.
One last thing.
I'm mean.
One last thing. I know I'm way late to the game.
Way
on this.
Late.
Way late to the game on this. But this week on Hulu, Mel's like, I have a movie that we're going to sit down and watch tonight. I was like, all right, whatever. And she pulls it up, and it's 10 Cloverfield Lane.
All right.
Okay, now
haven't seen it yet.
I have talked extensively on the show about how I am a Cloverfield apologist.
Right.
I fucking love that movie. I think it's a really good idea. The viral marketing campaign that J.J. Abrams did, I drove fucking headfirst into. I know all about how the chemicals that are in Slusho created the creatures that came out of the ocean, on and on and on. Like, it's retarded. Like, I know way too much about Cloverfield. I was really, really excited when I heard about this movie. And then I never got to see it in the theater. You know, I don't rent a lot of DVDs. I don't download stuff illegally as much anymore because we've gotten the letter that's like, stop doing it.
Too many times.
Yeah. So I never really got a chance to watch it. Then as year-end lists were coming out, fuckloads of people were like, 10 Cloverfield right. Lane was my favorite movie. So when I finally got the opportunity to see it, this is the perfect entry into the Cloverfield story. It is a really good movie. It's the acting is super solid. John Goodman is by you. One moment you're like, oh, and the next moment you're like, that guy's terrifying. Like, I mean, he is creepy and just like overwhelming, like just an overwhelming presence as an actor. And I'm not going to give anything away about it because I want you to see it.
Oh, yeah.
But the turn this movie takes, like kind of in the last half, is unreal. Like, it is so good. And when you see it, you're just like, oh,
I get how this works now. Like, and it's really, really good. I mean, I cannot speak highly enough of it, and I can't wait for the next few Cloverfield entries to show up. Because I remember that when Cloverfield first came out, that was, you know, we're going to create this kind of overarching story, and this is just a little part of it.
Right.
So while this may not be your speed of movie, there's other movies coming. And then it just never happened.
Yeah, yeah.
And now that it has...
What are we, like 10 years later or something? It's crazy.
Maybe even more, but... Now that it's out, I'm just like, oh, shit, I want my two more Cloverfield movies. And for all those people that were like, yeah, Cloverfield's bullshit, I will stand by. I love that movie. Like, nice. I enjoyed it in the theater. I love watching it. You know, I don't do super great with the shaky cam stuff. It, like, gives me that queasy feeling, so I don't get to watch it super often. But every time I do, I love the little – the way they tease, like, the monster, the way they hint at it, you know – when you finally do see it, the way you see it, you only catch little parts of it at a time. It's just, it's fucking a great movie. I can't wait for the next few entries into the canon, as it were.
Canon.
Take a break.
Take a break.
Come back. Talk about Why the Last Man.
Yes, sir.
Sounds good.
That was weak.
Oh, that wasn't any better.
This is Yehudi Mercado, writer, illustrator of Hero Hotel, and you're listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box.
Hey, podcast nerds. Obviously, you are smart enough to like these guys. I think you'll probably dig The Baboon Room. We have interviews ranging from a Vice.com Middle East embedded journo telling tales about when she got arrested during the Turkish coup to Singularity 1-on-1 Socrates doing this.
Hey guys, this is Socrates from the Singularity 1-on-1, and you're watching The Baboon Room.
And sometimes, the voice of God drops in, and apparently...
You know, I'm telling you, God really knows his shit.
And sometimes, we just nerd out hardcore about the EM drive and AI and Bitcoin and universal basic income and other cool shit. Search Baboon Room wherever you get your podcasts, or just head to baboonroom.com. Cheers.
Oh, shit, we're recording, by the way.
Oh, I was waiting for you to look at your phone.
I forgot all about it.
And we're back. All this little, like, mumble from Mel, and then just dead silence. Thank you.
Oh, that was disgusting.
So, pop culture classic is...
Why
the Last Man?
Jesus, so criminy.
Angry, slamming the door. Why the Last Man? 2002 from Vertigo, which is an imprint of DC, written by Brian K. Vaughan, largely drawn by Pia Guerra. Okay, there you go. Thanks. I'll say the Brian K. Vaughan part. You say the other part. So, quick summary. All living creatures with a Y chromosome, except for Yorick and his pet monkey, die. In a world where he is either a sought-after asset for his sperm or an enemy because he's a man, Agent 355 is trying to get Yorick from San Francisco to from Boston to San Francisco in a bid to figure out why he survived and save humankind. Volume 10 was nominated for the first ever Hugo Award for graphic novel. Somebody else won, but it was nominated in that first run of graphic novels from Hugo. And it won the Eisner in 2008 for Best Continuing Series. So it's, you know, pretty well... well-received, well-respected as a comic book. One of the reasons we picked it is because of that. Brian K. Vaughan is a fantastic fucking writer who does amazing comic books.
And he's too busy for us.
He's Brian K. Vaughan, man.
I sent the email out, and his people were like, is this going to be in front of a camera or just audio? And I was like, nah, it's just audio. And they're like, yeah, we're too busy for that. Which is fine. I understand. In front of the camera would have meant that I was probably going to pay him to do something. So that takes a little more precedent. No, I get it. People are too fucking busy.
It just hurts my heart because I just want to talk to him. So, but no. So I've read it before. I think I've read through volume 4. It sounds like you're actually probably further along in the story than I am.
So there's 60 issues, I think, in the whole run.
Right.
And I forgot how much we were supposed to read.
First five.
So I went through issue 41. I was like, but I mean, that's a testament to also how good it was.
Yeah.
I had no idea what this was. I'm not familiar with anybody or anything that is attached to this book. So I was like, all right, cool. You know, I could either hate it or I could love it. And I really enjoyed it. It's the one thing I thought was a little over the top and was like, I don't really enjoy this part was I feel like every female that doesn't automatically love him is like a fucking hate-filled person. And I feel like that kind of put women in a kind of a bad light. And, you know, unless they were there to protect him and they were hired to do so, and even they don't really like him sometimes.
Well, I mean, let's be a little real, though. Yorick is a little difficult to love.
Yeah. No, I understand.
Like,
I get it.
As far as the last man on Earth, he's probably not everybody's first choice.
I just felt like the women who didn't know anything about him, like, the book painted, and I don't know if it was on purpose or why, but the book painted women in a, like, such an angry kind of
aggressive
light.
Yeah.
And I was like, I feel like that's a little over the top. Like, I don't feel like every woman would be like this.
So I feel like there were just kind of two sides to the equation through a lot of the book, is that either women despise him just because he's a man,
right,
or they just want him, not necessarily because they like him,
right,
but because he's got that juicy, juicy sperm. Like, I mean, there's kind of like only those two sides of the equation through a lot of the
right.
book, which can be a little off-putting, but in general, the book is just so well done
right.
and
right.
so exciting. Like, it's a very action-packed book.
Right, and that's my and that's my only qualm about the book. I really enjoyed it. It's the art is good.
You read friggin' 40 some issues of it, dude. That's awesome.
The art is good. The story's really good.
Dig about it. It's a very serious topic and situation dealing with some kind of heavy and big issues,
right.
and is also hilarious, like, throughout the whole book. Like,
but it was, if I was to find, like, because, you know, obviously I love everything that I fucking put my nose in, so, and I've heard it before from people who listen.
Especially those people who you eat their ass to.
Yeah, but it's
7.5.
But if I was to find one thing that I was like, nah, that kind of bothered me, it's that. It's that females were put in a really strange position where they're either just wanted his sperm or they were very, very aggressive. And I don't know that that's really how – I mean, who knows? Fuck, maybe that's how it would happen. But I don't think so. I feel like there would be a lot more middle road.
Right, yeah.
And that was my only thing that I could say I was not a big fan of. But the women who – were either put into the, like, strong villain role or the 355 role were amazing. You got to learn about them a little bit more. They weren't just, you know, one book and you're dead kind of villain, you
and
know?
Nothing is very one-dimensional either.
Right.
Like, you know, we talk about these polar extremes, like, within the book, but, like, in general, the characters are very fully fleshed
right.
out. Like, they have... You know, they have reasons to do what they're doing. You know, they 355 is a really great example because she doesn't really like Yorick, but it's her job, like, as part of the Culper Ring. Like,
right.
she has to do this thing, and she's very dedicated to that and driven by that. And as a consequence, like, that tension is always there and in, like, a really cool way. There's so much. I feel like there's just so much nuance to, like, the characters. Like, even Yorick. Like, Yorick is kind of, you know, whiny and bratty at first, but as the book goes on, he gets deeper and better. It's really cool.
Yeah, and even those characters that you think are one shots, like the girl in the church, they end up somehow making their way back into the story, which is cool. Like you said, that makes you care about even the people who you think maybe are only going to be there for a short amount of time.
Yeah. I don't know. It's good. If you haven't read it, like, I highly recommend it. It sounds like Juan would also highly
yes,
recommend it.
I give it a thumbs up. Like
I'm John. I highly recommend it too.
Probably.
Just
because
I know, because I've talked to him about it before.
Oh, okay.
This is one of Mel's favorite comic books.
Oh, like, nice.
Mel doesn't read a ton of comic books, but she loves Why the Last Man. You know, it has that – she loves that sci-fi. She loves kind of like the deeper issues. You know, obviously as a woman, she likes women's issues.
Right.
And reading about that in comic books, it kind of speaks to like her, you know, as an individual. This is one of her favorite books. Like, nice. It's one of the ones that she's like, yeah, buy more of those. So I'm like, yeah, I'll buy more of those.
So, yes. I love comic books.
But it's cool. Like it's cool.
I'm excited to get to 60 because I'm hoping it closes. Because I think that's what when you know there's a beginning, a middle, and an end. When as a writer and you know the person creating the book, I think that's better than having just an endless amount and not really knowing where it's going.
And I feel like that's something that Brian K. Vaughan intentionally does. Like and I know like we talked with Joe Keating about that a little bit. Where he knew how Shudder would start, middle, end, and much to my disappointment. But you can tell, like, as you go through Why the Last Man, you can tell that it has that, like, there's a story arc within each volume, and then there's, like, an overarching story arc that clearly builds to a conclusion towards the end.
And so. I think that's good because you don't put filler in at that point. You know exactly where the story is going, so you could make the story stronger that way.
Right.
And this is it's a good story so far. I mean, watching Hero change from a crazy fucking lady to, you know, kind of crazy still, but a better human being is a good change. You know, cutting your own breast off is really weird and feels painful.
It's what the Amazons do.
Right. And it's I don't know. It gets a lot of praise from me, and it's a good story. I wish and hope we could talk to Brian at some point in the future because it's good. I'd love to hear what he thought. You know, obviously. I'm guessing every storyteller is probably like, yeah, that was good, but I'd like to hear what he thinks about it.
Well, I mean,
now. And
he's gone on to like the biggest of big Image comics too. I mean, as the writer of Saga, like he has this grip on how to tell like these really cool like family stories, you know. Like Saga is such a great story of how a family works, like no matter what the consequences or what the odds are.
Right.
You know, Why the Last Man has very much that same feeling between Hero and Yorick and like this whole like he's literally trying to get back to his mommy. You know, like I mean it's this
he's a man child. I mean he really is.
I mean, for fuck's sake, he's got a pet monkey. Like,
he didn't intend on having
a
pet monkey.
But he kept the monkey.
It saved his life.
No, I know. That's valid.
But you don't know. I don't know why yet.
It's awesome, though. Like, this is – it's – that's cool. Like, it's cool to do these – to do the comic books with you because I know that there's a ton of stuff that you haven't read.
Right.
And not because – not for any other reason other than you just haven't had a chance and haven't been reading comic books for that long. So it's cool when we can say, hey, you should check out this comic book. In general, people think it's really, really good.
Right.
And to see somebody from outside of reading it, you know, when it was first coming out or as it was coming out as trades or whatever, you know, this is years and years down the road. I mean, it's been,
2002,
like 14
I think it started,
years
right?
ago is when it started, 15 years ago. So here you are reading it and it still holds up 15 years later to the
good.
Point where you're like, I'm gonna consume 40 freaking issues of it. Like, that's awesome.
I told you I did a lot of reading.
I know you did. I'm surprised. I did very little reading because I was reading an actual book this time. So
I can't do it. I told you I can't do it anymore. I can't, like, having kids and you know, just having a busy fucking life, I can't sit down and read a real book.
I read them at lunch a lot of the time. You know,
I don't have lunch. That's
a half an hour where I just don't want to interact with anybody around me. And the easiest way to get people to not talk to you is to pick up a book and start reading it.
My lunch happens
except
at
for
different
Johnny.
Times.
My friend Johnny at work walks up to me. What you reading, man? It's like same thing I was reading yesterday, Johnny. Shut the fuck up. Like,
no, my lunch happens at different times every day, and I'm always eating with somebody, so it never. And then I'm editing the podcast, and then I have two kids, and I lead a very busy life, my friend.
I have twice as many kids, so I feel your pain. And work ridiculous hours.
Me too. I don't work, but I'm there.
That's amazing. So, thumbs up, thumbs middle, thumbs down.
Thumbs up.
Thumbs up.
I think John would give it a thumbs up. I know for a fact John would give it a thumbs up. I was looking to see if there was any like trivia or anything on the book, but
so
I looked for
that sort of stuff too, and I didn't really find anything.
Yeah,
that's why I gave the little bits about the awards that it won.
Yeah, so. You gave little bits, that's for sure.
Oh, man. So, next episode, we will be talking about Sandman Volume 1.
Yes, which I know nothing about.
If you would like to read like 80 to 100 issues of Sandman, that is totally awesome. Because I'm telling you, like, Why the Last Man is a really, really good book. It's one of my favorite Brian K. Vaughan titles. Sandman is one of my favorite comic books of all time, period.
Nice.
Like,
okay.
I mean, it is just...
I'm going to hate it now.
I know. So Volume 1, like I feel like you almost have to read more than Volume 1 because Volume 1 kind of has a weird, slow start to the introduction to the character. But
what is it about? So you told us a little bit about Why the Last Man in the last episode. What?
So,
tell us a little bit about
Sandman.
So Sandman
is about Morpheus, who is the Lord of Dreams.
Okay. I thought you were talking about the
no,
vampire.
No, there is no blue pill, red pill. So,
no, I thought you were talking about Morpheus from Spider-Man.
Oh, no. So he's the Lord of Dreams, okay? And the plot revolves around effectively like this pantheon of gods and like their interactions with each other and how the Sandman like is trying to accomplish these tasks, okay? If I remember correctly, it's been a really long time since I read it, but he's trying to get his helmet back in the first volume. And by putting on the helmet, it allows him to like travel freely through like the cosmos and like, all these other things.
Okay.
So it's Neil Gaiman like really at his finest, where he's embracing all these different like mythologies and cultures and kind of exploring, you know, what dream as a being would be like. So it can be incredibly meditative while also having like these really dark horror book hints. And like, you know, it takes place, oh man, I can never remember, I'm gonna butcher this, but parts of it take place in either the House of Mystery or the House of Secrets, like the DC title that I collect.
Yeah.
You know, so it just has these cool like throwbacks to old DC and like just kind of weird inroads to like these really meditative like thought processes. And I feel like it really bridges this gap between mainstream comics and like what we think of as like kind of like artistic graphic novels, like something like Blankets or Black Sabbath. I do like Black Sabbath though, you know, but like the more like, you know, there's that aspect of like books that are written as graphic novels that are tend to be more serious and darker, you know,
a little more kind of maybe even visual, like adult, and visually
a little more artistic.
Right.
Whereas, you know, mainstream comics are more like superhero-y, like action-y story. Like Sandman is this really great mixture of both, where it's taking like all the tropes from, you know, from superhero books, from DC, from that universe, and combining them with like the artistry visually and storytelling wise of like what you would think of as a graphic novel. Like it's a really cool mixture of the two.
Nice.
And like as a whole, Sandman is just a phenomenal comic book. And Volume 1 is obviously the starting point. And like it's more on the DC than the graphic novel side.
Oh, okay.
So it's a little bit of a slow start, but as it goes on, like I feel like...
How many issues are there of that?
Oh, man, I couldn't tell you. No. A lot, though. It went on for quite a while. I know those omnibus library editions that they sell are gigantic. So, but I can't wait to hear your opinion of it.
Nice.
I hope you don't hate it, but you never know.
This is so boring.
I know, right? So after we talk about Sandman, the show after that, we're going to be watching the pilot of Firefly, which I feel like you're going to do the same thing you did with Why the Last Man, where you're going to watch the pilot of Firefly and then watch all the rest of it and then watch Serenity and be like, I understand why everybody wants this show to come back now.
I do tend to binge things.
Oh, you – like honestly –
with as much binge watching as you do, you should just binge watch all of Firefly, because I've seen it all and I know John has seen it all, so you might as well. But and then after Firefly, we're going to talk about Superman Red Sun, which is the story about Superman crash landing in Soviet Russia instead of the United States. Super great, not Vertigo, was Elseworlds book. And if you don't have it, I have a copy that you can borrow.
I'll find it.
And then the show after that, we're going to talk about Sidney Poitier in The Heat of the Night, which when we were talking about Lethal Weapon, the whole buddy cop movie thing came up, and they a lot of people consider In the Heat of the Night kind of the first American example of that. So if I don't think you've seen that movie.
No,
have you?
No, I don't think so.
Holy shit.
If I have, it's been for fucking ever.
So when you think buddy cop movie, you think like kind of jokey, funny, and there is that interaction between the two police officers in the movie, but it's a serious movie. Like you're going to watch it and be like, I don't, why is this, these guys aren't.
Why did we fucking choose this movie?
these guys aren't buddies, and that white man is old and racist as shit. Like, I mean, it's a phenomenal movie.
Nice,
like
nice.
you're gonna like it. It inspired a sequel called They Call Me Mr. Tibbs, and there was a TV show and all sorts of stuff. But yeah,
In the Heat, that was that I vaguely remember the TV show.
Yeah,
just vaguely.
Yeah.
But that's cool. I'm excited.
I think you'll really dig it. But yeah, so next episode, Sandman Volume 1.
Nice.
If you're following along with this, like I'm trying to give you guys the information ahead of time so that you can communicate with us. Check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/thinkingoutsidethelongbox or Instagram or Twitter at @outsidelongbox or give the Michael Kirk Memorial Hotline so that that poor boy doesn't commit suicide at 970-573-6148. Tell us what you think of Sandman. It doesn't even...
Or Why the Last Man.
Or Why the Last Man. It doesn't have to be just Sandman Volume 1. I know there's some of you, Doyle, Daniels, I'm looking at you, that I know have absolutely read every fucking issue and every tie-in
of
to Sandman ever.
Nice, okay.
So please hit us up with your thoughts on Sandman for the next episode, and we'll come back to Why the Last Man if you want to hit us up with opinions of that.
So we had two interviews this episode.
Yeah.
You've already heard the first one, but because we didn't put a place for it, tell us a little bit about Gamma Gals.
Gamma Gals is about basically a female and diverse group of young ladies that are really into Dungeons and Dragons and fantasy and stuff like that, who get hit with a cloud of gamma radiation, as all good superheroes do, and they turn into basically a very family-friendly kind of 60s superhero crew.
Nice,
like it sounds like a lot of fun. Definitely the kind of thing I want to pick up for like Sophia and Hannah. Like it sounds like a lot of fun.
Stefano Terry. He wrote it or he drew it?
He is the writer, illustrator, and creator of the book.
Oh, so he did the whole thing.
Yeah, and that's coming out on Fanbase Press, who we are. I am quickly
a
becoming a really big fan of those guys. So
you, like I said, you already heard the interview after the first segment, but we wanted to say thank you and say a little bit about the book. You're going to hear now, after this segment, a book from Joe Vallon.
Yeah, we're going to talk to Joe Vallon, who does The Adventures of Jesus and Frankenstein, which sounds exactly like the kind of comic book I would read. And he talks a lot about his other projects and just like kind of his drive to like build a comics community and like all this. I mean,
yeah, because he's a part of CCBE, and somebody told him about us through
he's
that.
One of those guys that's like driven to do a billion different things. And like listening to him talk about how excited he is for it is really cool. So.
Nice.
Spoiler alert, I already recorded this interview and I'm just talking about it in front of this so that Juan can put it into the episode. The magic of podcasting.
Podcasting.
Awesome. So we'll be back in a little bit.
Hey, this is Cowboy Johnny Mantell, the president of the Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame, and you're listening to me right here live on Thinking Outside the Long Box. Come see us at the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame and keep your ears posted right here for all the latest news. God bless.
This just in. We interrupt your currently scheduled podcast for an important announcement. I'm Paul.
And I'm Jimmy, and we are Meta Podcast, meta-analysis of everything, video games.
And not video games.
Well, primarily video game-themed podcast.
Check out our Zelda series and stay tuned for whatever adventure comes next.
Now we return to your regularly scheduled podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the show. On the line, I have Joe Vallon. He is the writer of Adventures of Jesus and Frankenstein, Skeeters, and The Outrageous J3. Joe, how are you doing this morning?
I'm better than average. How are you, sir?
I'm going to say average.
Well, there you go. That's perfect. Absolutely perfect.
So we like to start off all our interviews kind of with an origin story of X project or whatever. You're sure. Working on a ton of different projects, but the one that I think I'm the most fascinated with is Jesus and Frankenstein. So let us know, what's the origin story of the Jesus and Frankenstein project?
Yeah, that's the one that's kind of like, that's my heavy hitter. I'm working on that with Andrew Glassman is my illustrator for that. And we just picked up Brian Arnson is our pencils for J3. He's going to be coloring J. Frank. And so we got a good little team. Production should be decent. Right now we have about 8 pages out of the project. And what it is Jesus and Frankenstein. It's a very linear, character-driven story where Jesus and Frankenstein are on a mission to confront Satan and hell, and he doesn't want them to. And that's the long and short of it, really. It's kind of all you need to know as far as the story.
Where did the idea of pairing Jesus and Frankenstein as like kind of buddy superheroes come from?
Well, I think that, you know, kind of like, you know, I think it might have been something that I experienced in passing or whatever, but I overheard a conversation where there were parallels drawn between Frankenstein and Jesus having both been, you know, dead and resurrected and a conglomerate of whatever. So I was just like, okay, cool. They do have a lot in common. I could see that. They match up on paper. What would it be like if they were chilling out together, and what would bring them together, and then what would keep them together? And also, what would Jesus be like if we took out the whole religious element? And that's where we're at. Jesus is basically, you know, I figured, okay, like take like the best guy you ever met, right? Like somebody just, there's no judgment in this man. He's the hardest working dude. He's just, you love being around this guy, and he'd never ask for anything. And he just sort of goes around just helping people everywhere he goes. I think that would be plenty good enough for people to follow that type of person. And, you know, he would be somebody noteworthy. That's without any religious context at all.
Right.
So that's the way I looked at it. So I just wanted to put these characters in a real setting and give them a larger than life mission.
Like as a carpenter, like if Frankenstein has like damage, is there like an ability for Jesus to do light repair work on Frankenstein?
I think you're really going to enjoy chapter 4. I could just put it there. Chapters 4 is for you, my man. So
nice.
Yeah. Yes, the answer is yes. He can fix Frank. He can work on Frank. And this comes in handy when not only repairs but possible upgrades, you know. So
when you know, when you're in like envisioning this comic, like I imagine that at some point you were like with, you know, the other people that are working on it, and you're having like spitball sessions. Like, how amazing were those? And like, how bizarre did the ideas get?
Well, you know, honestly, they were pretty well grounded. Andrew is a very pragmatic guy. You can even see it in his line art. If you look at the art for Jesus and Frankenstein, it's very
clean,
very clean. Yeah. And everything's got a purpose and everything's deliberate. Yeah, I mean, you'll even notice like we have the first 6 pages up now, and you'll notice the last 2 page spread we did, you know, like there's this glow of light that just like kind of just passes over the trees from Dracula's castle. Just little detail like that, the moon glows, things like that really bring it to life. So if you look at his art, it's almost like you know him, because Andrew's a very pragmatic guy. So when I get fantastical in these ideas and I get way out to lunch and I'm throwing what we call the pile of shit at him, he basically chips away at what the reality of the situation would be. And he goes, yeah, I don't think he would die like that. Or, yeah, I don't think, you know, and he'll bring you to what would make sense. And then I say, well, how could we show that? And he goes, and then we start thumbnailing and he gets excited and we just start cranking.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's awesome.
So tell me a little bit about Skeeters. It's a web strip that you write. Like how does that whole process work? Like, you know, there's a lot of really popular web strips out there. And sometimes I'm just like amazed at like the sheer volume of like content that they can come out with. Like how do you go about creating a strip and, you know, getting that out?
That's a good question. Andrew and I we're toying with the idea of maybe setting up a small house in the future. I don't even know if I'm supposed to say that, but
you heard it here first, fans.
I don't understand why that would be a secret. I mean, it's an idea. If we have a good pool of talent around us now, through my various projects and Andrew's just networking, where, you know, if we can figure out this self-publishing thing to where artists can figure out how to put it out and maybe we can help them out with printing costs and things down the road, maybe it would be prudent to start a house. So we're thinking about it. Skeeters was – I attracted an illustrator going by Maria Lynn. We really liked her line art and wrote a book called Scooter the Skeeter about the greatest skeeter who had ever – basically like those. And you know, we started working and then, you know, I had never made a strip before and we were going to jump right into production of the graphic novel. And Andrew stepped in and said, why don't you guys make a web strip instead, you know, and build up your chops and build up your process and build up your fan base until you get to a point where you can jump into the book at your peak of knowing this world and already having a fan base that wants to buy it. And I said, well, that's a really good idea, man. So now when I meet a new artist, because you know how when you meet people and you're networking and you say, hey, we should do this or we should get together or whatever, usually it's a lot of bullshit.
Right.
Well, this kind of irons that out. It's like, well, put your money where your mouth is, dude. You got to make a weekly post now. And it's like, okay, so if you're an artist and you want to work on a comic with me or a writer like me, this is my way of kind of putting you to the test. And also, Andrew's right. We can build up a fan base this way. It's a good way to familiarize people with the characters or even like a spinoff character. It doesn't have to be your main character from your book, but you could use a spinoff character as like a vehicle into your universe. So they kind of know what they're looking at, and this way when you do come out with a book later, it's just like it's just garnish, you know. So I think that's the idea anyway. Web strips are designed to as almost like a trust project, but it's also a productivity, and you have to meet deadlines now.
Right.
So that's the good part about it, is deadlines. I think that's the difference between a hobbyist and a professional is deadlines. You know. So
I mean, when you're looking at it, you know, from that perspective, I mean that's. That's the kind of thing that people are looking for, like as a podcaster, when mm-hmm. when people talk to us about their complaints with the show, typically it's one of two things. You had too many people trying to talk into one microphone and so we can't hear all of you. And right. The other thing is, you know, if you get behind, people are anticipating the next show. They're anticipating the next episode. And yep. when it doesn't come out on time, that bugs them. So, and that's, you know, that's the level of professionalism I think most podcasters are going for is, you know, mm-hmm. let's satisfy our fans by coming out regularly. And you're doing the same thing like through a web stream.
Yeah.
It's interesting. So,
well, I think you guys maybe a step or two ahead of where I'm at in my thing. I'm just starting out. So really no one's ever heard of me. So I have to, you know, like when I approach, for example, if I have an idea, like if I see an artist and I like their art, like I might like their line art, I might like their shading, something grabbed my eye. And then I'll ask them, are you working? And if they tell me no, like, you know, I'm just kind of laying around right now or whatever. I usually ask them, why aren't you working? And usually it's because they haven't found a story that connected with them to commit to a long-term project.
Right.
That's not a weakness of mine. So I let them know, well, okay, I have about 48 pitches I could hit you in the head with right now.
That's awesome.
But why don't you instead just send me some anything? Just send me some anything. And just let me take a look at it. And I let them know I'm ground level. I'm not Mr. Hotshot. I'm not Boss Man or anything like that. However, I've come to realize something just very recently, like I'm stepping into my own skin sort of deal, because I felt like I was sort of kind of faking it until you make it with many aspects, because I don't know anything about this industry initially. Now I sort of do. But now I feel like there's certain things I can just acknowledge. And one of them is I know how to manage a project and I can do that very well. And the other thing is every once in a while I stumble on the occasional okay line or a decent story premise. I do know how to manage a project. So that's one thing I promise them is if you just put hands to tablet or hands to paper or however we're doing this, I'll get us there and I'll get people to read it. And so every week I do my promotions. I network. I go to different comic book shops in the area and I just say hi to everybody. I go shopping for singles and I talk about Skeeters and Jay Frank and everything else. And it's moving along slowly, but surely, guys.
Shameless self-promotion is absolutely – one of the best things that you can do, just literally telling everybody, hey, this is what I do.
See, I look at it different. I call it prideful self-promotion, because I'm ear to ear, and even if you don't want to hear it, I'll freaking corner you. You know what I mean? Like, you're going to hear about J. Frank, man. You're going to hear about Skeeters. And it's like, honestly, people respond so well to me. I don't have any problems with people when I'm out and stuff. I'm always shaking hands. I'm always saying hi. There's people I really look up to that are
kissing babies. It's very important.
Oh, dude, I would.
All right,
I
just making sure.
I would. Absolutely. Dude, if you brought a baby up to me wearing a J. Frank shirt, I'll sign that baby's forehead.
This is here forever now. You can't wash your baby's forehead ever again.
Yeah, I'll bless that kid as an official J. Franker, man.
So the one thing we haven't heard about yet in this interview is Outrageous J3. You were describing it to me a little bit before we we started recording, but tell us a little bit about Outrageous J3.
J3 is the hardest one to explain, and I almost kind of don't want it in a way, because it's like all right, it's about a handy capable superhero is how I say it. This one's illustrated by Brian Arntzen. He's our colorist on J. Frank. He's going to be doing pencils on this. Somebody said Shades of Invader Zim and such. I'm seeing something different. I'll wait for your guys' opinion when the line art comes out. It's about a guy with no arms and no legs. And he's sort of mech'd together in sort of pots and pans. He rocks like a radio flyer as his main transportation. And, you know, he's always rocking shades. He's got some he's got like a funny little comb over and such. But he's basically a washed up hero who's landed in this town called Diagonal City, which is a town full of alcoholics. And Diagonal City, all it has in the city is like 7 bars and 1 liquor store. And the liquor store is like where, like, you know, you would go to get married or arrested. Or, like, you know, it's the building for everything. It's the human rights offices. And the clerk is the one who's judge, jury, and everything. So Diagonal City is a really effed up place. And J3's keeping an eye on the city loosely, but he feels like a washed up hero. And he recants stories of when he was a hero to a young kid named Dickie. And so he gets to relive his glory days. And he does still have his old suit of armor and his Harley wheel if he gets pissed. And I think that you'll see at some point he's going to probably have to redon that armor. And I think that's the excitement of J3, is that it's a redemption story about a washed up, handy, capable hero.
Nice.
Yeah. So
it sounds really interesting. Like it
good.
And the art, like when you describe the art, you kind of explained it, you know, to me, like a little bit of Earthworm Jim, a little bit of Invader Zim. Like I loved that stuff, like back in the 90s. I mean, Earthworm Jim I played relentlessly and largely because I just thought it was hilarious to watch as I was playing it. So
yeah, and J3 refers to himself as a worm when he's being self-depreciating, and he's like kind of shitting on himself, and he's like, I'm just a worm, what can I do? And people are correcting him like, you're not a worm. I just sent you the main character design for J3.
I am going to look at it here in a moment.
Do your thing.
So when I was perusing the Jesus and Frankenstein Facebook page, I saw the little kind of advertisement, the comic video that you did for it.
Yeah,
I've seen that on a bunch of different things, you know, other like Kickstarters and stuff like that. Like how exactly did you go about doing that? Because I've always been kind of fascinated by it, and I've never had the opportunity to ask someone.
Okay, you mean the trailer that we have, the animated?
Yeah, the little animated trailer. Okay. Like how, because I mean, I've seen it for like all sorts of different like comic books, and I know that somehow they're just taking the art from the comic book and animating parts of it. No, not at all. Okay.
Not at all. I mean, we were inspired by Skull and Shark, Dave Raposa's thing. Andrew sent it to me, and it was like that. It was moving layers of like the art, and it was just some badass like 80s retro song, and it just looked hardcore, and I was like, what is
the music? The music reminded me of like Castlevania, like a ton, like that. Well, kind of like mixture of electric guitar and like classical music. I loved it,
dude. You know, like I'm beaming right now because I wrote that song, so you're like flattering me.
Oh,
but
nice.
Yeah, that's called Blood Soup, and it's a song I've been sitting on for a while. And first of all, the trailer that you're talking about is not in service anymore, meaning it's up, but Andrew's not. He says it's not even close to representative of our quality levels. He's actually, that was we got a Photoshop program that had Animator on it, and we got a 30-day trial. And I was like, Halloween's coming up, dude. That's kind of like a J. Frank holiday. And he's like, yeah, I know. I was like, we got to release something, man. Like, and we weren't – at that time, we were still dabbling with we weren't really cranking pages or anything yet. So it was just kind of like a rough time. We were trying to release marketing or just something to catch people's eye, like, here and there. And you don't want to miss Halloween. So I was like, all right, dude, we got to do something. He goes, you know what? I get an idea. And we were inspired by that Skull and Shark video, I remember. But Andrew – no, that's all from scratch, brothers. Like, he started over. Like, that's all him. He animated that whole thing. He learned how to do it in 30 days. He sent my song Blood Soup to John Gifford III at Fame Studios, which is like big time place for this stuff. And I guess Andrew and John went to school together. So we kind of called in a favor for that. And he just engineered my song. And he reworked my whole song, by the way. That's not like the original anything. I did write it. I do love my original. It wasn't high enough quality,
right,
to put out. So Gift pretty much redid the whole damn thing, including playing the guitar. Like, it was amazing of him. I love you, Gift. Thank you. That was amazing. But honestly, the trailer's not really in service, because if you look at like the new poster, for example, and then you look at our animated trailer, there's like a Carl Lewis leap of difference in quality. You know what I mean? Like, Andrew just, I don't know what got into the kid. I don't know if it was gamma radiation. I don't know what happened over the course of the project, but I mean, he's always been slick with his line art, but he's just on another level lately, dudes. Like, he's doing some, his 3D rendering of Frank he just did on our Twitch stream. I watched that whole thing and stayed out of it.
Yeah.
I literally, and actually I got in trouble too, because I forgot that when I log on as Jesus and Frank, I'm the official, and I didn't realize that. And when I logged on, I said, cool music, dude, or like whatever. And he's like, you're confusing people. They think I'm saying that. And I'm like, oh fuck. Right. Yeah. So I got all geeked out and excited, and I was even like fanning out,
like,
you know,
to yourself basically. Well,
dude, you know what's so amazing is, like, okay, like, I'm a writer in the sense that I'm a wordsmith, and I write blogs, I write short stories. That's what I'm mainly known for. But I stumbled into comics, and here's why I'm hooked on it. A, I'm a huge fan. But B, in what other way could I ever look my own character in the eye?
This is true.
And it's like this. It's so it makes your skin crawl when you see exactly what you saw 2 years ago looking right at you. And you have to realize that. On some level, I just created something that's going to outlive me. And it's like your character knows it. And it's almost like, in a way, if you looked at it in a really meta way, your characters look at you with like pity, like, oh, you're short-lived. That sucks. You know, like, we'll enjoy our time together while you're here. You know, like, that's the way I look at characters you create, is kind of like they're their own beings after that.
I think you may have given birth to a new pitch right there.
Think so?
Yeah, that sounds like an awesome idea.
I could write a meta. I could do a meta comic about that, like a creator and his characters.
Like how the comic book character like knows that he's created and will be around forever and feels
sad for his
creator.
It's all like 16th wall. It's not even fourth wall. Like it's more like it's like, and you, the reader, you're helping this. You know, it's like what? Yeah. Okay. Well, find me. I need like two pencils and a colorist and a letterer. So, you know, just send me all them and I'll make it.
Nice. I'll see what I can muster up.
Yeah. Well, hey man, you have the connection. So, you know, I keep getting in trouble for taking on projects. Like, dude, you're going to run out of time. You shouldn't take on another one. And then I do. And, I think I have room for two more.
Nice. And you had mentioned that you're working on two other ones that,
well, they're not in production right now.
But then, like, but you have like five projects going on, and like, here's what I'm curious about. Like, I always have a lot of ideas, but I really only have time for the podcast because I have four children. I assume you don't have kids.
No, that's why. That's exactly why. I think that,
man,
I've been holding
spare time.
Well, I've been holding out on the whole baby factory, because my deal was kind of like, all right, I knew at some point I wanted my little army of people that look somewhat like me, and that I could train to go hunting and fight for me and so on. So I needed 30 to 40 sons. I knew that. But I wasn't ready to start making them until I found my so-called place in life. So I'm 36 now. I'm getting a little old to be a dad. So I'm kind of looking at these IPs as sort of like churins, you know, and I'm like, I feel very protective over my comics in a way that, like, I don't feel like I'm missing out on fatherhood, if that makes sense.
Right.
You know, like I feel like a complete man, so to speak, just creating, you know. So I think when you make a kid, that's what you've done. You've created something. And now your kid's going to go create things, and that's immortality. But I think if you actually also create things, then you may not need to have kids.
Yeah, I can see that. That's actually a really valid point.
So
I just,
who knows?
I had my kids first before I started podcasting, so I'm stuck with them, I guess. Well,
yeah, you have no choice at this juncture. Yeah,
I wish one of them was standing right here to hear me say that.
Brutal. Brutal.
Oh, man. Well, Joe, this has been an awesome conversation. Tell everybody how they can find, you know, Jesus and Frankenstein and Skeeters and Outrageous J3 and, like, anything, any of the myriad of projects that you're working on.
Yeah, and, you know, I mentioned I have 5 total, 3 in production now, 2 I want to be in production. And I think between the 5, you'll get a full flavor of, like, my personality, because the one that I really want in production now that's not is super dark, is crazy dark. I mean, so dark that it's not for some folks. And then there's, like, Skeeters, which is harmless slice of life strip about mosquitoes.
Right.
and it's really – it's cutesy. It's fun. And then you got J3, which is cute and kind of a little satirical. And then you got J. Frank, which is just bad assery. It's just kind of – I mean, it's it'll scratch your action itch, but it's also I just think it's just like this tension builder. It's a crazy tension builder, and I think that we're just going to – when we leave you at the end of the story, I think we're going to leave you in a place of just bewilderment. So how you can find us is you can find Jesus and Frankenstein on Facebook. We release pages on Facebook, but they come out later than our Patreon. So you can read it for free on Facebook. That's facebook.com/Jesus and Frankenstein if you want. And if you like the line art, you like the pages, you like the story, you can get over to Patreon, which is patreon.com/Jesus and Frank, and actually help support it. And that's what we're trying to do.
Nice.
That's why we're doing these interviews and stuff like that. We're trying to get the word out. I don't want to sign with a publishing. I don't want to sign with a label at all. You know, I've dabbled with the idea.
It sounds like you're working your way even maybe towards just doing your own. Like, you have enough projects.
Well, that's what I'm getting at, too. And, like, I think if you own your own stuff, you don't need to sell, like, exorbitant numbers to do okay financially. It's just I want the story in as many hands as possible. So when I would consider going with a label, it would be just to get it out to a bigger audience. And I would take a hit financially even to do that. But why compromise if you don't need to? So if people step up and they like it and they want to support it, amazing. If we can do this full time, pages will come out faster. That'll be really cool. And then everything else is free that I do. So if you want to go look at Skeeters, for example, that's on tapastic.com/series/Skeeters and just subscribe. It's totally free. Every Saturday I update, and I'm trying to recreate that Saturday morning cartoon vibe. So J3 will be right next to Skeeters. And I heard a rumor from Andrew, if we can cannibalize our pages in such a way where it'll fit on a web format, I think we're going to launch J. Frank on Tapastic as well, which would be dope because I think we'd be monsters over there because J. Frank's incredible.
Nice.
But who knows? I mean, a lot of things are in the work. Andrew's got that Twitch stream. You'll find it on our Facebook. Every week he updates that. So if you're like an artist or something like that and you have questions, pop on. That dude's a wizard. He will help you.
Very cool.
So, and if not, it's just a good guy to know. And I think that's everything. That's everything.
Cool. Like, it's cool that you're not just like developing your own stuff, but you're willing to say, hey, if you have an idea, approach me with it. If you're an artist, approach me. If, you know, you have questions for an artist, approach him. Like, that's really cool. You're not just trying to develop like your comic books. You're kind of continuing to develop a community of people. And that's awesome to me, man.
Yeah. You beat me to it. Community is the word, brother. So, but, yeah, man. And, you know, not only that, I mean, my email is joevallon3@gmail.com. If you have a project idea or you're an artist looking for like something, hit me up anyway, just because what I do sometimes is I pair people up not related to me. So if I know an artist looking for something and I know a good writer that has a good story, I might say, hey, so-and-so, this is so-and-so, have fun.
Nice.
Yeah, dude. It's just so people are making stuff. I mean, if you're an artist or writer and you're not working, you're missing the other half.
You're like the Tinder of comic books.
Well, I'm not as sleazy.
Oh, okay.
But, yeah. Anyway, I do appreciate it, guys. Thank you so much for having me on. You guys are awesome. I love the show.
Oh, right on. Well, I'm glad you enjoy it. I don't know that most of the people that we interview even listen to this. So.
No, I think it's good banter. And also a quick shout out to Mutiny Comics. You guys are rock. Thank you for the hospitality every week. And of course, Mile High Comics on Jason Street. Chuck, you're a saint, dude.
Oh. Dude, that place, it's impossible for me to go in there and not spend endless amounts of money. Like, it's just
dude,
so
every
huge
time, and they always hook me up too. They hook me up, and I walk in there and I see the J. Frank poster hanging up over the register, and I'm like, that's home.
That's awesome.
That's home. So I really love those people. Like, whenever they have poker events, or you guys should go down there. Everybody should go there. Next time they have an event, let's all of us hang out too.
Yeah, that'd be a blast, man. Let's do it.
Yep. I'm down. So anyway.
Very cool. Well, thanks very much, Joe, for being on the show. We really appreciate it. And I can't wait to see more of your projects coming out. So
yeah, I appreciate the support, and I'll share everything. So send me links and remind me of stuff too. Send me links, because I'm a space cadet. I'm busy.
Oh yeah. That is all Juan's wheelhouse, because he has to remind me of everything.
Okay. So now I know who to blame. Then.
Exactly. Good. When you don't get a link, blame Juan.
Anyway. All right, guys. I love you. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks.
I'll talk to you soon.
We're Penguins versus Possums.
And you're listening to
Thinking Outside the Long Box.
Yay!
Yeah, you can leave your headphones.
And we're back!
That's terrible.
I know. I don't do it as
good
as John.
Your wife called you a fag.
She does all the time.
Or a hag. Could have been. I don't remember what she said.
It's coming from my wife. It's definitely fine. So,
old man, bitch.
So we've talked about this a little bit already.
Have we?
We went over to your house.
You did?
You gonna let me talk? No, just kidding. We went over to your house for Royal Rumble. My
yes.
wife was like completely latched on to the wrestling. We got the WWE.
Can't see ya!
We got
gross.
Can't
you
see
can't
you.
See me.
Stop being so soft. S-A-W-F-T, soft. But we got WWE Network, all right? And thank you, Juan, for
yes,
convincing
you're
my
welcome.
Wife. Watching Raw, watching SmackDown on Hulu, watching the other stuff, like, you know, Fastlane's coming up in a few weeks, you know, watching NXT and 205 and stuff like that. The thing that is really fucking the best part about WWE Network is they have this weekly show called The Countdown, and okay. The Countdown is like the top 10 whatever. Yesterday I was watching, like last night before I fell asleep, I was watching the top 10 backstab moments
oh,
in the
nice.
WWE. Like, I mean, it's like these great things. And last night Mel and I sat down and we watched The Princess Bride, which obviously stars Andre the Giant,
right?
You know, and Manny Patinkin, a bunch of other
oh, yeah.
fucking awesome people. It's one of the best movies. Like, I told Mel as we were watching it, it's one of the few movies that I consider to be like a perfect movie.
Right.
Like, it's got romance, it's got action, it's got, you know, shit.
It's essentially a
the
book.
The Dwed Pie Web Wobbits. You know, it's got funny voices. You know,
a giant.
It's got a giant. So between watching Countdown, watching The Princess Bride, and like kind of revisiting that WrestleMania 2, 3, 4 era of wrestling, and seeing, like, you know, videos again of like guys like Hogan in his prime, Andre the Giant, you know, Roddy Piper, that sort of stuff. I remember, like, I distinctly remember I got invited over to a friend's house for wrestling. Okay. And we went over, it was a pay-per-view, and it was Starrcade. Okay.
Oh, okay. WCW.
So at the time it was like Sting and Ric Flair
right.
and like, you know, that brand.
Right.
Like, I didn't know them. Like, I'd never seen them before. I had only ever watched WWF.
Right.
And so watching Starrcade, I was like, man, this sucks. Like, these guys aren't cool. They're not funny. There's no Hacksaw Jim Duggan. There's no, you know, George the Animal Steel.
Right.
There's no Sergeant Slaughter. Like, these guys don't even have fucking G.I. Joe figures, man. Like, you know, WWF in that era was the perfect wrestling franchise, I think. I don't know that...
In the 80s, you're talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, in the 80s. Like, I don't even know that the Rock and Stone Cold era, or, you know, the rise of the Undertaker kind of took place in
oh, yeah.
that era. Like,
yeah.
those first, like, WrestleManias where he just showed up with Paul Bear and, you know, I mean, that level of drama and over exaggerated characters, like, you know, when you have Sergeant Slaughter go from God Bless America to being like on the Iraqi side during the first Gulf War.
They had to like rush him out of stadiums.
Yeah. I mean, that whole over exaggeration of drama and storyline that I feel is really the turn from like a sporting event, whether scripted or not,
right,
to like actual sports entertainment.
Right.
Where even now, like on WWE Network, all the shows have this disclaimer that all the WWE characters are fictional and do not reflect the personal lives of the actual wrestlers. I think that's hilarious because in my mind, like, Triple H is always like that.
Right.
And Stephanie McMahon is always
like
that.
He always carries his sledgehammer.
Yeah. You like go. He's all, hey, Stephanie, I need to go get a Slurpee. You know where my sledgehammer is?
Side note, I kind of feel like Chris Jericho always wears sparkle pants.
Oh, I feel like Chris Jericho.
He's in a band. He's in a rock band, too.
I feel like I feel like Chris.
That's why he doesn't wrestle as much because he has an agreement with WWE that he'll come back when he wants to and leave when he's done. And so Fozzy, the name of his rock band, I've never listened to him. All I know is that there's some sort of rock band. But he's – so after WrestleMania, he's supposed to start a new album with them. So he'll take time off to go spend time and
do
his own
thing with
them.
So Kevin Owens is going to injure him at WrestleMania?
He did. He's already attacked him and all that shit. I don't know how close you are.
No,
but
no.
I told you there were three paramedics. Oh, my God, is this real?
You're not I haven't watched – I haven't seen that yet. Yeah.
Three paramedics to hang out with you.
Well, so that's so.
But you grew up in a. So I feel like I'm more of a 90s wrestling guy. I love
the classic
everything,
era. Like,
but the 80s was when it was like, you know, real. The wrestlers did who they were in the ring was who they were outside of the ring.
Right.
You know, in the 90s, it started changing, and some of that, you know, the internet became more of a thing, and you started knowing that there's something funky about what's going on here. So.
Movies like Ready to Rumble started to come out. Wrestling's not fake.
I'm less of a fan of 80s wrestling, more because to me it was a little slower than I like.
Yes. So like going back and watching it, I don't enjoy watching the matches quite as much unless it's there's two wrestlers that still I feel like would fucking electrify the crowd today, and that's Ricky Steamboat.
And like, he still does.
And
anytime
he still does every
out.
Once in a while. Mm-hmm. And fucking Superfly Snuka. That guy was fucking gigantic. Mm-hmm. Like, he weighed like, you know, 250 pounds or something like that. And watching him climb up, not just to the top rope, but to the top of the cage and like do his hang loose and fucking that frog splash off the top is just so fucking amazing still. And to see like such a big dude do that.
Right.
Like the only person that's coming even remotely close to doing shit like that right now is Braun Strowman. Like that guy lay a ridiculous drop kick for the size of human being his. That's not going to happen. But like, so going back and like watching this 80s era, that's really my only complaint is there were such big guys that like it was just two bruisers fucking slugging it out. Like this last week on Raw, it was the Big Show and Braun Strowman.
I didn't get a chance to catch that, but I heard it was a really good match.
It was a really good match, but it was totally like watching Sergeant Slaughter versus Andre the Giant. Just two fucking gigantic dudes slugging
did
it out.
Did you see – did he take his top off? Like, did he put his straps down?
Yeah.
Because he's fucking – ripped.
Well, he did
just in the past like 3 months he has fucking just changed his body figure.
He did the running suplex on the Big Show, and by running I mean he did kind of like the two-step waddle suplex.
He kind of ambled and he's like, oh, this guy's heavy.
So this is one thing that's kind of cool about like now that I'm an adult and can look at wrestling in like a significantly more sophisticated way than fuck yeah. Like, I know, but like not I'm chanting this is awesome because of what I know, as opposed to like this is awesome because I'm a little kid and this is amazing. But watching this, this is going back to that Braun Strowman Big Show wrestling match. Braun Strowman has the Big Show in the corner. Okay. Thank you, Hannah. And he goes to do the running suplex. Okay. He gets him on his shoulder. He takes about a half a step. And like, you can tell that Braun Strowman is having like a very difficult time picking up the Big Show. For as huge and as strong as Braun Strowman is, the Big Show is that.
It's still like 400, 500 pounds. That guy is
still way bigger, way huger. So he gets like a half a step and he does this super sloppy version of it, right? He goes down. He goes to pin him. Everybody knows it's supposed to be the end of the match, right? But Big Show kicks out of it and then stands up and, quote unquote, stumbles right into the middle of the ring. And Braun goes up, sets up for the same move, gets him on his shoulder clean into the middle of the ring, takes two real good big steps, right, and drops him. And I know for a fact that as they were pinning that first time, Big Show says, I'm going to get up so you can do it again. Like, you know, Big Show right, had to go out of his way to say, hey, like, that looked like shit. Let's get you over, man. Like, you're right, the show this month. You're the one that's on your way to WrestleMania. I'm
right,
not.
Right.
Let's get you over. Like, and that, like, I know watching that now that I'm an adult and like can read about it on the internet and watch it, that was cool. Like, because you know, it's just the Big Show doing right, a solid for like the next generation. Well, he's been of around wrestlers
for
800 or so years.
That's why he's so big, because he's been around for so long.
Also, I can't wait to watch Kevin Owens stand back up after getting speared.
Nah,
by
I think
Goldberg.
He's gonna lose.
No, but he'll get speared and get back up.
Nah, I think he'll lose though.
I think he'll lose too. But
I think this will be Goldberg's last title run for a month before WrestleMania, so yeah, that he can, because he wants this moment for his kid and his wife,
right?
And I think that's what'll happen. And then I think Lesnar will beat him at WrestleMania.
And if WWE doesn't give that to him, that'll be bullshit.
I love wrestling. I talk about wrestling.
I know,
all day.
Me too. But I wanted to bring it up because, like, going back and watching like those old videos, man, like that era of WWF, like way before it was WWE, mm-hmm, with dudes like Andre the Giant, who, like, even when he made the turn to be a bad guy, like, you could tell he was just the nicest fucking human being alive. Like, Hulk Hogan may have been like may have turned into a douche, but when he was the Hulkamaniac and he was telling you to brush your teeth and say your prayers, like, he was my fucking hero.
Right.
I mean, we all had those like 12-inch rubber dolls and we would play with them at, you know,
stretchy.
Yeah, and just like we would bounce them off of each other and be like, this is what, you know, this is what the big elbow looks like. I mean, we played wrestling, like, you know, it was fun and it was active and I just loved it. And
at work every Saturday I'll listen to old promos because it pumps me up and makes me excited to go out and sell
this
a car.
This Saturday I'm going to sell you this Honda like you wouldn't believe. I'm going to be the title holder of Greeley Honda's best goddamn salesperson. Oh, I'm blowing this promo, guys. Juan, go back to your office.
I love it. Oh, that's funny.
With like a Honda logo.
That would be amazing.
I feel like that's going to happen. It may be made out of cardboard, but that's going to happen.
I'll have Ric Flair sign it the next time. Oh, speaking of, I'm totally going to get something signed from Lita. It's happening.
We go
back to Colorado Springs Comic Con.
It's funny. When we were when I was talking with Mel, you know, there's way more women's wrestling in the WWE than there used to be.
Oh, yeah.
And so I'm like coming into wrestling kind of again. I was really unfamiliar with all the women wrestlers. And Mel asked me, do you like any women wrestlers? And I told her there's only ever been one female wrestler that I liked, and it was Lita.
I like Trish Stratus too. I think both of them
I'm not
matches.
Familiar with her.
They were
really.
They were the two.
Yeah.
There was no way you could have Lita without Trish Stratus.
I know,
they
but
were the
I'm just
two
saying, like,
best female wrestlers.
I watch Lita more as kind of like a tag team partner with the Hardy Boys. So like I never really watched a lot of like her individual matches.
Right.
I only kind of ever watch her as a backup. But watching her do like fucking just the same shit that the Hardys were doing off of fucking ladders and all that shit.
She's like a badass. Oh, yeah.
Flips and shit she does. I'm like,
We were watching Countdown. We were watching the top high flyers last week, and number one was Rey Mysterio Jr. Mel had never seen the 619 before, and she lost it. She's like, what was that? It's like, I love that shit, but...
You need to watch Swerved. I told you. That was the one show you need to watch. It's fucking hilarious. I'll pick it up. Oh, it's so funny. I'll
start watching it.
Cool. We'll take us out of the show.
So, I'm going to do something a little different.
Uh-oh.
I have...
Of course you are.
I wanted to do a clean ending to the show where we talk about all the different
Instead
ways
of a
that
dirty
you,
ending?
Well, see, what's happening right now is why I can never really end the show. I try to give everybody all the information that, you know, this is how you get a hold of us via Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, and then you fucking assholes just constantly interrupt
it. It's good, though. It's funny.
It is funny. So I'm going to say...
It's not as funny when you just talk for 5 minutes.
I'm going to say all that stuff. I'm going to say all that stuff right now, but we're going to record an end piece, too, that goes on the end of every episode so that we can actually really get that information
out.
Oh, fuck you, then. Fine. So... If you're listening to this show and you enjoy our witty banter and the way Juan interrupts literally everything I say, and you would like to say, Juan,
what?
Maybe shut the fuck up for once and let Gabe talk, because that's the opposite of how life really works. I'm the one that talks endlessly.
Yes.
But if you would want to interact with us for whatever reason, you know, you want to send us your, you know, hey, I found this random butt plug on the internet and thought you guys would want to talk about it.
Hey, or, congratulations for being the best podcast this week ever.
Ever. Yeah. Yeah.
This week ever, of course.
Hashtag Potter and Family. But if you want to communicate with us, you can find all the different ways that you can do that via Facebook, email, Twitter, Instagram, all of that shit at www.totlb.com. It's basically the easiest way to find out more about us and find out how to download the podcast, how to communicate with us. And now we've started, you know, we've posted two of them so far of some articles of like things that we're interested in that don't necessarily get talked about on the show or that come up during the week that we know we're going to forget about.
And John's weekly thing will be weekly thing for us as well.
The weekly
the comic book thing.
Comic book roundup from Hall of Justice. So this week we had an article about some music that I'm interested in. Not his picks for the week, but literally just these are the comic books that came out this week.
He does some picks.
I know, but you know what I'm saying.
It's
like great raw information. If you want to see what comic books are coming out this week, we have that every Wednesday on our site. And we also did a little article on Funko and how their IDW is going to be releasing some Funko one-shots and Funko pop variants, which are going to
Funko,
which are going to go one of two ways. They're either going to be ridiculous wee popua because they're so cute. It's cutesy.
It's going to be popular.
They're either going to be ridiculously popular or like nobody's going to
buy hate it, but it'll be popular. You hate all kinds of popular things.
I own three whole pops. I do hate most popular things. So find all that information at www.totlb.com. How to contact us, how to get in, you know, into our social network and all that shit. And also now more articles, more content, extra content besides the show, working towards video as well.
Yes.
So I know we've said that a bunch of times, but
we're make a video
pushing,
here at the end.
We're
too.
Actually pushing it through.
Yeah, fuck that. Tired. I don't care. We're going to force them to see us.
Anyway,
bastards.
If you would like to support us, there's basically two ways that you can do that. You can either go to amazon.totlb.com, and that will take you directly to Amazon's search page. Anything that you buy off of Amazon, it doesn't charge you more. It doesn't do anything different other than it links to us, and we get a little bit of a kickback as like an advertiser. Or you can go to our Patreon page, www.patreon.com/totlb, and that's basically a way to support us kind of on a month-to-month basis. You know, we had a few supporters that, due to financial reasons, ended up having to back out, so no guilt. Are you kidding me? I'm so poor. Like my wife and I make decent.
It's like 30 degrees in here right now because there's no heat.
I know. My wife, my wife, wear pants. Stop walking around.
I'm sorry
with your dick
that I didn't.
Just you would be less cold if you wore pants to the podcast. I'm just saying. Patreon.com/TOTLB.
Yes.
We're going to be reshooting a video for that as well, and probably updating like kind of the prize packages that you can get. And I finally figured out that on Patreon, you can actually post subscription videos that to see them on the Patreon page, you have to be like the certain level of Patreon support.
Oh, nice.
So,
nice.
So I don't have to do that through YouTube and all that
for
stuff.
For any podcasts out there, we should be recording new commercials here pretty soon too.
Yeah, so if you're a podcaster,
send us your commercial. We'll send you ours. We've done it with like 10 other podcasts, I think, at this point in time.
I
know. I don't either. I just put it together and that's enough. But it's a good way. You know, it's like the Potter and Family thing. It's a good way for you to tap into an audience that you may not have.
And I do want to do a very special shout out to Potter and Family at Potter and Family on Twitter, PODERNFAMILY.
Even if you're not a podcaster, it's a great resource
to find new podcasts, yes. And it's a great way for podcasters to network with each other and get the word out about your show. We would like to say thank you very much for nominating us for Podcast of the
Whoever
Week.
Whoever did it. I have no idea.
We are super honored that we not only won, but dominated.
So straight dominated.
To you other podcasts that were nominated this week, good try.
Hail Hydra.
No, fuck you. Crystal Pepsi is really good.
No, go listen to them. I don't have what their names are in front of us. You I think what? One was Fickle shit. Here, fuck. I'll bring it.
Yeah. I got it right here.
Fickle Fan Podcast, I know, was one of them. The Dean Show was another one, and Something to Brag About was the fourth one, I believe.
But we were the winners.
Yeah.
And that's really so, all
but,
that matters.
But go listen to podcasts. Go listen to the podcast. So
yeah, it's awesome.
We had a lot of podcasts who talk about comic books that are like, yeah, comic book podcasts got to stick together. And that's why they voted for us.
I saw somebody that said, I'm going to vote for other. I was like, just vote for us because it starts with the same letter. So anyway, thank you very much to Potter and Family. Like, we really appreciate it. And I mean, Juan said we've already seen like a little bump in numbers.
Yeah,
so.
For sure.
Other than that, oh, there's one more very important thing that we have to talk about.
Oh, our phone number?
The Michael Kirk Memorial Hotline is 970-573-6148. If you have any comments that you look at the computer screen and you're like, I can't express this through the written language, I have to swear at you in person. Please give us a call at 970-573-6148 so that Michael Kirk isn't forced to commit suicide out of pure loneliness.
Side note, the feedback that we got on the episode that's coming out today, hilarious. It's not just Michael Kirk. Blackshire, I think is
Jonathan
his name.
Blackshire.
John Blackshire. He like puts together like these commercial kind of things. And at first I was like, it wasn't a robot. It was actually him this time, but he called and Google Voice sends me the transcript of the call. It's a loose transcript.
Right.
So in the transcript, he says, you know, I'm calling because I need some help, tech support, blah, blah, blah. He's downloading an episode. And I was like, well, that's kind of weird. I can't really understand what you're doing. But then I listened to the feedback and he's got like noises going on in the background and it's this whole fucking commercial and it's hilarious. I thought it was really funny.
Nice. Well, thank you, Jonathan. We appreciate that. Oh man. So,
and there's this other like I think it was like a British person or something. They didn't leave their name, but they were like, oh fuck, fine, I'll call so Michael Kirk doesn't kill himself or something. It's fucking hilarious.
Oh,
it made
awesome.
Me laugh. So
that is super, super cool. So please keep the calls coming. I can't wait to listen to those two voicemails because I haven't had a chance to hear them yet. But give the Michael Kirk Memorial Hotline a call. Save a young man who's really into midget porn's life by calling 970-573-6148. Leave us a message. It doesn't have to be funny. You're not on the spot to be hilarious. You can
you can be.
If you just have an opinion on anything that we've talked about
something
on the show,
out.
We would love to hear it. Or if you just have something that you think we should be talking about.
Or if you just want to say, fuck you, Juan. I'm okay with that.
Shut up for once, Gabe. Where's John?
Yeah. We got him for 10 minutes today.
But with that said, I'm Gabe.
I'm Juan. Wow, he was loud today.
This has been episode 57 of Thinking Outside the Long Box. We will catch you in 2 weeks.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast. Join us on Facebook and Twitter to get behind-the-scenes information for exclusive content and to be notified when new episodes are available. The thoughts and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individual and do not necessarily represent or reflect those of the Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast, Baron Space Productions, its partners, or affiliates. The Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast is made available by its creators, Juan, John, and Gabe. The podcast is edited and produced by Juan, and Albie is the co-executive producer. The Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast is a Baron Space production.